Welcome everybody to this very special call where we will be talking about topic selection for your blog. It's a very special call that we're running for our Become a Blogger members. We would like to give you a little bit more detail about how to find the right topic for your blog. It's a question that we've been getting a lot from previous members, people just struggling to find out the right topic for their blog. And so we decided to have this special call where we'll tell you a little bit more about it and also give you the opportunity to ask specific questions about it. Now, this call is being recorded, and so just keep that in mind as you ask a question, and because we'll be turning on the hand-raising functionality very soon. Yarrow, I think perhaps for now we won't have the hand-raising activated just yet. We just wanted to say a few things first before we get into the question and answer session. Just to give you a bit of background and a bit more tangible information that you can already use right now to come up with the right topic for your blog. Now, I think I'll get Yarrow to say a few things about this first, and then I'll also give you my thoughts on a way that you could go about for finding the right topic for your blog. So Yarrow, at this stage, I think I'll hand it over to you because I think you wanted to say a few things about this as well. And once you're done, I'll say a few words as well, and then we'll get into the question and answer session.
Okay, thanks, Gideon. All right, everyone. What I've got for you today is a little introduction to what you have to go through in order to find a profitable topic for your blog, or really for any sort of information publishing business on the internet. I want to point out before I actually explain this that there is no right or wrong way to do this. Everyone does it in their own way, and it's up to you to make this advice apply to your unique situation, your unique personality, your skills, your experience, and wherever you are in your life at the moment. So I want to say that because a lot of what I'm about to show you actually is things I didn't do with the businesses I've run, which may seem a little bit counterintuitive, but it's just the way I've gone about choosing topics to run businesses. So in my situation, I've always made the choice pretty much based on ideas I'd like to test. So I'd see an opportunity in a marketplace. I'd say, wow, there could be a good website there or a good business there. Let's put it together and see what happens. It's a very much idea generation and then straight to testing. Not so much research. The research is actually done in a live test. So to make that relevant to a blogger, you'd have an idea for a blog and then just create the blog and test it. Now, the issue with that is, of course, you may have a topic that's not got any chance of being successful, profitable, or getting any sort of audience to it. So the possibility of doing smarter research is definitely beneficial. And I would recommend this to people, especially if you're on some sort of budget or you've got a time constraint or you just don't have the type of mind that can work in a free-flowing situation where you need structure. So what I'm going to give you now is some different types of structures that people use to choose their topics. So I'm going to begin this with what I consider to be the best three-step description of the psychology behind why people buy things, in particular on the internet. And this, I have to give full credit to Eben Pagan. I heard this from him in his Get Altitude program, and he's also said it in some of his videos. I consider him definitely a guru in the information publishing market and a mentor of mine. He's got a huge multi-million dollar business in the dating industry and also in, of course, the internet marketing business. So let me give you that three-step process. This is worth writing down or definitely going back to the call and listening to again. So I'll say it carefully. Here we go. When looking for a target market, the people you are attempting to sell something to must satisfy these three vital criteria. One, they must be experiencing some kind of pain or irrational passion for the subject. Two, they must be actively searching for solutions. And three, there must be very few perceived options they can go to solve the problem. I'll just go over those again in case you missed them. One, they must be experiencing some kind of pain or irrational passion for the subject. Two, they must be actively searching for solutions. And three, there must be very few perceived options they can go to solve the problem. Okay, so let's just drill down those three things for this, the consideration of a blogger and choosing a blog topic. I think the first point is probably where most people go wrong. And, you know, if you get the first wrong, then the second and the third are irrelevant. If a person is not suffering from a pain or they don't have some kind of irrational passion, then it's very unlikely that they're going to be motivated enough to go searching for solutions online. And that means you won't have the opportunity to have a blog that gets in front of those people. So when I say pain, it often means what someone is, for example, is suffering from an illness or they have a problem they need to fix in their life. You know, that may be something simple like a broken toilet, or maybe they're suffering from quite a bad illness and they're researching information on that. So it can be any type of problem that triggers enough motivation in them that they actually do something about it. And they're motivated to not just find a solution, but also to possibly pay money to get the problem solved. So that's really important, because a lot of people, when they start blogging, they will choose topics that just are not, they don't have an audience that have enough of motivation to go online and look for information. Now, not everything is about pain, of course. Irrational passion is perhaps a little bit less defined, but also a very relevant criteria. So if it's not something they're suffering from in terms of a problem and painful, then it could just be that they are irrationally passionate about a subject, so they will therefore go online and actively search for it. So this is, I think, a very relevant one for bloggers, because when we can find topics that we're personally irrationally passionate about, and also hopefully there are enough people online who share that passion, therefore we can build a blog and get in front of those people. So, you know, examples of irrational passion I love to use are things like any kind of television series. You know, you've got the Star Trek fans, the Star Wars fans, maybe, you know, more modern days, the Desperate Housewife fans. All the sort of mass media, you might have people who are interested in Britney Spears, you know Michael Jackson of recent. You might have just material goods. People are fanatical about shoes in women's case, or golf equipment in men's cases. There really are countless irrational passions available. The most important thing is there are enough people sharing that irrational passion, and it is irrational. This is the key here. It can't be a thing where, oh yeah, I like to play tennis. It needs to be, I go online every day and read forums and read websites and get all the latest news and write posts and contribute to the community of tennis players. And also, I buy tennis equipment. Very important there. There needs to be enough of an irrational, it's a funny word, but it needs to be that much of a motivation that they actually take action and daily, if possible, participate in their community. And there has to be enough of them to doing that so that you can build an audience around that subject area. So those are the two main criteria. If you have the motivation behind those, then the next natural outcome is they actively search for solutions. So that refers usually in particular to solving a problem or using a search engine. That's really what Evan was talking about there. But we can take this a little bit further when it comes to blogging and just say that they're actively participating in whatever it is they're either solving to, well, if it's an irrational passion, they're actively participating in the community. If it's a pain or a problem they're trying to solve, they're actively looking for solutions using whatever tools are available online. And that can include your blog. My blog is actually a good example of the pain problem. People are suffering from a lack of, well, really, if I drilled it down, it would be freedom. You might say it's money. So people are suffering from a lack of money, and that's the pain, the problem they have. And my blog gets in front of that audience and gives them answers to help them solve that problem. Now, the only reason that I can have a successful blog, though, is that there's enough people with that problem and enough people go online every day searching for it. And, you know, they find my report, my blog, et cetera. And that's why I have a profitable business. So you need to have a volume of people who actively search and participate online in that topic area. And I'll talk about in a moment some of the ways you can go about assessing that. Lastly, number three, there must be very few perceived options they can go to solve the problem. This is a little bit more subtle. When I say perceived options, it's actually a little bit more about what's going on in their head and type of marketing use, not necessarily about what actual real physical options are available to people. So, a case in point, you may, let's take my example again with internet marketing. There are countless people who provide information and help people to make money on the internet, and that's what they specialize in. But you need to actually find a point of differentiation from everyone else. And that's where usually people go into sub niches. So I'm a specialist at blogs. That's my sub niche. And that gives me the ability to become one of the only few perceived specialists at that particular niche. So if I was to go back to the shoes example, let's say we're going to have the irrational passion of shoes and let's focus on women. You could be the perceived specialist at high heels, and that's what your blog would be about, nothing but high-heeled shoes. Personally, not something I know a lot about, but I'm sure there's a market for that out there, and very likely there are some websites already tailored to that, and no doubt there are a lot of stores selling shoes as well in that market. So the trick here is to create the perception in the mind of the person who would be looking for information that you are unique or very few people. You're one of very few that can provide a specific type of information. And that to do that, it almost always is finding a sub-niche of a broader category. You may also find ways to specialize present a perception of specialization just because of what you've done, the experiences you've had. You may have been the only person who's sailed around the world. Therefore, you have a point of differentiation. Maybe the people you know, you may be very well networked. You may have some fantastic testimonials. You may have years and years of experience that's impossible to replicate. So there are all kinds of ways you can establish this perception, but understand it's only a perception. There may really be thousands of people who all provide the same thing, but one or two or three or 10 or 20 of them have this way of making themselves stand out from the crowd. All right, so that covers the three most important criteria. They're a little bit abstract, but that's really important that we get that out of the way first, because that's the psychology we're going for here when we're choosing a topic for our blogs. What I'm going to look at now, unless you have any things I should stop and look at, Gideon, is actually some of the practical elements of going through this process.
That sounds good. Keep going, Aaron.
Okay.
I guess just to give you a heads up, I'll of course go into a little bit more detail of the how-to of finding out, you know, what is that thing that you're really passionate about. So that's the sort of stuff that I'll cover next after Yara's talk.
Yes, I'm deliberately avoiding anything to do with talking about what you are passionate about. That would be Gideon's specialty. And frankly, I think it's probably more important than anything, but it's important to also put out these practical steps, because a lot of you right now are probably feeling a little bit lost in terms of, you might have some passions, you're just not sure whether they could be profitable, whether you can write about them on a regular basis, whether there's an audience out there who will actually want to read or listen or watch, if you do video or audio, the content you produce. So these steps are research steps you can take to help you find out whether it's likely that the topics you have are potentially profitable, or if you have no idea what topic idea to go for, this is some steps you can do to actually find topics that are already popular online. Bearing in mind, though, this is all just an hypothesis until you actually get out there and test it. So this research will not give you anything more than a very, good inclination that there's a possibility that that topic will be successful. It's not a guarantee until you test it. Okay, so the first technique you can use to find popular topics is actually just go to Amazon.com. The great thing about Amazon.com is it's obviously a massive superstore. In particular, it's focuses on books, but there's also all kinds of products there. But if you just even go to the book section of Amazon.com, it tells you what's popular, because the top 10 books in any given category, or the top 100 books, whatever it is, indicates what's selling the most. That means those topics have enough of a demand online that people buy the books in great volume. So just going to Amazon.com, finding the book section and checking out the categories is a great way to find popular topics. And, you know, I think this is a fantastic step just to do if you're really getting started and you don't have an idea for a topic, to stimulate ideas. So it'll give you a way to come up with possibilities, and you can create a list of maybe 10 topics you might consider going into. And it's very simple. Most people know how to navigate Amazon.com. On the reverse side of that is a very practical step you can do in actually assessing the volume of searches for certain keywords. So what I'm actually going through now is a methodology that lots of people use. I personally was introduced to it from the people, Adam and Alan from Niche Profit Classroom. Now, these guys use this technique, and if you actually head to my blog, you'll find an interview, two-part interview with Adam, which really breaks this down. So I'm not going to go into too much detail. Just so you, if you want to find that, just go to my blog. You should all know where it is by now, and just search for Adam Short. That's AdamShort. Adam Short, and you'll find his interview in the podcast section there. And it breaks down this methodology, which goes like this. So you go to Amazon.com, you find a popular topic there based on the category structures and the top 10 lists at Amazon in the books area. Then you go to the Google AdWords keyword tool. Now, this is a free tool you can use. It's available. I think the best way for me to get you to find this is actually to go to Google and type in keywords tool, and that will bring up Google's keyword tool as the first result. And the idea then is, once you've found a topic from Amazon, is actually to put that topic into the Google AdWords keyword tool, keywords tool, and look for keywords that have good search volume. Now, Adam and Alan define this as 1,000 searches per month, according to the Google data. This can vary a lot. I mean, there's no, again, right or wrong area here, but you know, if you've got at least 1,000 searches according to the data that Google gives you in that keyword tool, then you know there's at least enough volume to potentially have a popular topic. The flip side of this, though, is you want to be careful, because you may actually be targeting a subject that is also very, very popular. So as we talked about before, you have to have few perceived options. So if you don't have a way to make yourself, I guess, find either a sub-niche in that category or stand out somehow, you need to make sure there's not a stupid amount of competition. Now, the way Adam and Alan define that is, you just actually go to Google, type in a keyword that you've discovered using the keyword tool that has good volume, and then see how many results show up when you just do a normal Google search. The example that Adam and Alan constantly use is betta fish tanks, which is a special type of fish. It's a sub-niche, and in particular, getting a fish tank for that type of fish. That's BETTA. Now, if you type in betta fish tanks into the Google keyword tool, it'll give you monthly search volume of well over 1,000. And then if you go to Google's normal search tool and type in betta fish tanks within inverted commas, you will find there's up to somewhere around 8,000. It's obviously going to change. Adam and Alan recommend finding phrases that have 10,000 or less competing pages. So if you do any Google search, you'll see in the top right, it says showing results 1 to 10 of about, and then a number. That number represents the number of pages that show up for that search phrase. So if you're seeing a million, that means there's a million competitors out there competing for that keyword. Too many. So Adam and Alan recommend trying to find 10,000 or less. I don't think you should be as stringent with this, especially if you're looking for something you're passionate about and you have some sort of strength in, because often the strength of your specialty will carry you above a lot of the competing sites given enough work put into it. But for the sake of doing quality keyword research, you want to find search volume of at least 1,000 monthly and less than 10,000 competing pages in Google. That might be a bit confusing for you guys, so I do recommend at least checking out Amazon.com and having a play around with the keyword tool just so you can see how that works, and it's free. So, okay. The next option, again, this is another methodology. Adam and Alan's system is one way of doing it. There's lots of people who actually do something similar to that. They go and find a popular topic, then do some sort of keyword research to check out the viability of it. Jeff Johnson is a well-known internet marketer, another person who specializes in niche marketing. Now, his angle is actually quite interesting, because he doesn't care whether he's passionate about the subject. He just looks for opportunities to make money. So if you're a blogger, this would be like basically setting up a blog just to get in front of certain type of audience that could make you good money, and you don't necessarily care about it. So not necessarily what we teach, but it's worth studying this, because it does show you a great methodology for finding where money is online, which obviously is important to us as professional bloggers. Jeff has a very simple system. He just goes to ClickBank. It's not the only way he does this, but it's a great example and another way to easily find potentially profitable topics. So if you go to clickbank.com, go to the marketplace section of ClickBank, and search then by categories based on the most popular. So you can sort by popularity and then also search by category. And I'll just list the top selling information products there by category. So if you go there and you find the number one and number two and number three for any different category, those are popular topics. They are great topics for blogs. And the beautiful thing about this is you already know you have an information product or several to sell because ClickBank has them in there and you can sell them as an affiliate. So you could actually find the topic through ClickBank, create a great blog around that topic, and actually then start marketing those affiliate products through ClickBank as well as your first monetization strategy. So that's a great way if you're still in that situation where you don't know what topic to go for and you're looking for ideas. ClickBank is full of lots and lots of possible topics to cover as a blogger that already make money. Now, I could give you many more options that are similar sites to ClickBank, but I don't want to do that because you're going to get overwhelmed. So I recommend Amazon.com, which will show you what sort of physical real world products are selling well, and ClickBank.com tells you what great information products are selling well. Two ways to find possible effective topics for blogs. I'm almost done. I don't want to take up too much time. I'm just going to mention a few more techniques here and a few more research tools just to round it off before we start talking about the actual passion side of things. One of the great ways, and this is actually probably the way I've come up with most of my ideas, is just to actually look at what other people and what other companies are currently marketing. What are they selling? What are they advertising? And you can do this on anything from television to radio to the newsagent and seeing what magazines are being sold. You can walk into a Borders or any bookshop. I'm not sure everyone in the world listening to this has a Borders, but I'm pretty sure you all have bookshops. And if you just go to bookshops, the bestsellers in there are great examples, again, of possible topics for blogs. The magazine rack in particular is fantastic because blogs in a lot of ways are the online equivalent of a magazine, especially if you're not looking to become a specialist. Even if you are looking to become a specialist, if you go to a magazine section, you can find, you know, the hardware magazine, the golf magazine, the homewares magazine, the interior design magazine. All these are possibly profitable topics for blogs and very likely are already successful blogs online. So if you're looking for ideas, just look all around you. And that's often how I came up with my ideas. I'd just be living my life and I'd get stimulation from people around me, from companies selling things to me, from things being marketed. If you really want to have a good look at direct response marketing, watch late night infomercials. The way they do what they do is fantastic for looking at, the psychology behind marketing. Lots of great ideas there. And, there's almost too many options. And that's the thing here. You have to actually get out and test once you've got these ideas and put together a blog or two or three. And hopefully one of them will take off. I'll mention that in a second. One last point more on the keyword research side of things. This is very practical. This is something that you analytical people out there will really appreciate. And it's definitely worth doing this if you want to be confident there's actually enough people online searching for answers. So you already know that there's the Google keyword tool. And that's a great free one. There's actually a few other keyword tools that people recommend you check out. Word Tracker is one such keyword tool. If you can get that at wordtracker.com. That's Word Tracker. That's a very popular one. It does cost money. Wordzee, it's another one. That's wordze.com. Wordze. And Keyword Discovery, which is at keyworddiscovery.com. Now, all of these services, Word Tracker, Wordzee, and Keyword Discovery, they are like massive databases of people's searching habits online. So what keywords they're using to find what information, and they give you all kinds of data, like raw data on that subject. Great if you're looking to find out, how popular a topic is, and in particular, what phrases to use when writing blog content. In fact, that's the only time I've actually ever used keyword tools. I've gone to the Google AdWords keyword tool, typed in the keyword I'm writing a blog post about to get ideas for what words I need to include in the headline, possibly in the content, maybe in the tags, maybe as a subheadline, etc. Because often you'll find one word is a lot more popular than another word, even though they basically mean the same thing. So that's a great thing about keyword tools. But right now at the beginning at your topics collection period, this is just another way to do this research to check whether there is enough people already doing that searching. You mentioned that was criteria two, people actively searching for information about a subject. These tools are designed to show you that purely based on search results. Now, don't forget though, the internet is not just about search engines. There are lots of other tools. We gave you an X Factor video about Facebook and how to find profitable topics using that. And Gideon put together that. All of you Become a Blogger students will be able to get access to that at the Become a Blogger blog, the public one in this case. And that was just a case of finding out on Facebook what were the popular groups. So as always, any sort of social media, wherever there already are people, that means there's enough of an interest that you could possibly write a blog about it. So if there's a large forum already covering a topic, good chance you can cover the same topic or subtopics within that broad category with your blog. Any social media, popular StumbleUpon pages, popular MySpace pages. If you go to, in our case, look at whatever popular blogs are already out there and just find a little sub niche of one of the popular blogs. You know, you might look at my blog and say, okay, I write about internet marketing and blogging. I'm going to focus 100% on blogging for women. That's going to be my specialty, or blogging for profit, specifically for stay at home moms. You know, there's all kinds of categories that can be broken down that way. Couple more points and I'll be done, I promise. There's a couple more research tools you can use. These aren't specifically about keyword research. This is more about finding the websites that already do well in certain subject areas. The tools you can use for this are SpyFoo, that's SpyFu.com, and that will give you information about any website. You can type in a domain name there and it will tell you things like how well it ranks, how competitive the search terms are for it, etc., etc. SEMrush.com, that's SEMRUSH, another similar service that will give you information about how a website's going, either your own or competing websites. And on that topic, compete.com, it's a public service, a bit like Alexa.com. I wouldn't trust the data too unequivocally, but it is helpful. So you can put in a website there and it'll give you an idea of the traffic that website has. So all great tools to assess other people's websites, because it'll give you an indication. You know, if a website's getting thousands of visitors, chances are you can go for a subcategory and do well yourself. Now, I find keyword research personally very confusing, and I don't like it because I'm not an analytical person. I'm an ideas person who likes to test by just putting content out there and seeing if it sticks. I have friends who do very well using that method, but you have to accept the fact that you're going to have some failures, and you're not going to be, you're going to be wasting time, if you want to call it that, because you're doing research without doing, I guess, the prior research in assessing the market, other than doing a live test. So it all depends on personality types and how much time you've got. I recommend, if you are a research type of person and you really need to succeed as soon as you can, do the research, do some keyword research, analyze the markets, check the communities out, and cover yourself there before you dive into a topic. If you're not, you can be, for example, I talked about Albor Svala before. When he started his blogging career, he started with three blogs, which were the Windows Vista operating system, going out in his hometown, and cars. The car blog is the one that eventually took off and is now a very successful blog, but he started all three at the same time, and all he didn't do any keyword research, he just tested them by writing content, setting up three blogs, and seeing which ones he enjoyed and which ones got traction, which ones got an audience. Now, the good thing about that is he eventually found one that he loves, as well as a lot of other people loves, which is his blog, caradvice.com.au. And that's a very successful blog. It's something he loves, and it's absolutely massive. And that's nice when you can get that connection between a profitable topic with lots of people in a marketplace who are irrationally passionate about cars, and it's something he's also irrationally passionate about. So that's a good point now for me to hand over to Gideon to find out where passion, in particular your passion, comes into this topic selection question.
Thanks, Yaro. That was really good. And it's amazing how every time you know, even the two of us, we listen to these things and we work through these issues ourselves. It's amazing how much new things still come up. And it's, you know, like I mentioned in the roadmap report, it's really a lifetime journey to find out, you know, what are these things that that you should be blogging about, that you're passionate about and that sort of thing. And I think if you can look at this whole exercise as an experiment to help you, I guess, find your way on the internet or in life, it's a great way of looking at it, because it allows you to play around and to have fun and to see what comes from it. I would like to cover basically three things here with this topic selection, with specific focus on finding your passion. The first thing I want to cover is just putting everything into perspective for you. You've now listened to what Yaros had to say about, you know, basically how to make the most of your topic, of how to find profitable topics in a specific niche. The second thing I want to talk about is, you know, why it's so important to get this right. And the third thing is then, you know, to give you some very practical tips on how to find your passion or whatever you're interested in life. So let's first have a look then at the first thing I want to talk about, which is just putting everything into perspective for you. If you've had a look at the roadmap report, the roadmap to become a blogger report, the first part of the report goes into the five different milestones that you need to go through for becoming a successful blogger. Now, the first milestone is to help you discover your passion. So this is what I'll be focusing on right now for this talk. The second milestone goes into discovering the need. And this is really where you find out whether there are enough people around in the world who'd be interested in what you're also interested in. There's no point blogging about a topic that you're the only person who's interested in it. So you may need to find out, you know, what is the wider area of your interest levels or your passion, and then find a specific niche area within that area where there may be a lot of other people interested in that same area as well. And then, of course, it goes into testing, testing whatever ideas you came up with until you find something. Like Gara just mentioned with Al Borsfeller, he found the caradvice.com.au blog, which just took off for him. And which leads into the next milestone, which is you just focus on that. You get rid of everything else and just focus on that one thing that's going to help you become successful. And, of course, the final milestone is to make money. Now, all of this, certainly in my view, is kind of rooted in this first milestone of discovering your passion. Okay, so this puts everything into perspective. And this leads me to my second point, which is, you know, why is this so important to get it right? If you can find out the right thing to blog about for you and for your personal situation, first of all, you're going to be a lot more motivated to keep going. If you're going to be blogging about something that you're not truly passionate about, that you're not truly interested in, you're going to lose interest. And it's not going to take you long before you're going to give up. And so if you can find something that you're truly passionate about, it's going to keep you going. It's going to motivate you to keep coming back. Even if you may not see big results at first, because you're so passionate about that thing, it's going to help you keep going. So that's really key. And just by keeping going, this is going to increase your chance of success in your topic area or your niche. A lot of people drop out. You know, a lot of people, the main reason why a lot of people don't succeed at this or at anything really is because they give up way before they should, way before they show any real results. And if you can find something that you're really passionate about, it's going to really increase your chances of success, because you're going to keep going much longer than all those other people who may have just selected a niche because they thought there might be some money in it. So the idea here is to really select something you love and that can keep you going. And this will help you build a long-term successful blog. This is about long-term success. It's not just about quick profits and overnight quick rich schemes. Blogging is really about building a sustainable long-term business. I mean, look at what Yara's been able to achieve with entrepreneursjourney.com. It's this one massive hub of a community that people just keep on coming back to, this one blog. And you know, that's where we get most of our traffic from and most of our preeminence from. So, and I don't think this would have been the case for Yara if he wasn't passionate about entrepreneurship and specifically entrepreneurship online. So another thing I want to say about that is that, you know, all of this really is about building your own following. If you've got a following on the internet, you can really do magic. And, you know, it was Seth Godin that talks about it in his book called Tribes. I really recommend you read that as well. He talks about building up your own tribe. And blogging is just the most wonderful tool for doing that. If you have a successful blog, something that you're passionate in, you're going to be attracting other people, other like-minded people who will be interested in that topic too. And they'll be interacting with you. They'll see you as the leader. And over time, you'll be building your own little tribe. And as your tribe grows and grows, you'll become more predominant on the internet. You'll own more internet space. And as a result, you'll also be more successful. So that's why it's important to pick the right niche. And if you can, pick something that you're truly passionate about. Now, the next thing is, I guess, where a lot of people get stuck. You know, you might have heard a lot of people say, right, you've got to pick something you're passionate about. But the problem is how, you know, how do you actually find this thing that you're supposed to be passionate about? Some people already have it figured out at a very young age, but a lot of us, including myself, you know, it's not as obvious. And I think there's a number of reasons for that. One reason could be because of social conditioning. You know, we've gone through, as we grow up with our parents and the schooling system we go through and the whole education system, there's a fair amount of conditioning that happens that kind of makes you think in a way that may not be aligned with your true passions. For example, I went to a school where our passions were pretty much, our passions and talents were pretty much ignored. And we were taught that, you know, you got to get good grades in these specific subjects if you want to make it in the world one day. And so we were conditioned that way from a very young age. And so as a result, the natural thing I did after school was I went to university and did a course on engineering, something that I thought I could make a lot of money from. The point was I wasn't really passionate about it. So I finished the course, but I never continued actually doing the work in there. So, you know, to me, it's really about finding your gift that you can give to the world. If you can find out what that true gift is that you have, that's something you can give to the world. And I really honestly believe that each person on this earth has a very specific gift that they can give to the world. And this very much relates to what you're truly passionate about, your natural talents. All of us have natural talents. And it's just a matter of rediscovering those same natural talents that you've been given and to be able to turn that into a gift that you can give to the rest of the world. Now, Jim Collins, in a wonderful book called Good to Great, I really recommend you read that, talks about the hedgehog concept. Now, the hedgehog concept, really all it means is finding that one thing that you're really good at in life and just focusing on that. And the idea comes from the story of the hedgehog and the fox. Now, the hedgehog, he's only good at one thing. All he can do is when he gets attacked, he rolls into a little ball and no one can touch him. That's all he can do, though, but he's really good at it. The fox, on the other hand, he tries a new thing every single day. One day he tries and jump on the hedgehog from the one side. The hedgehog sees him before and just rolls onto a ball, and the fox can't do a thing. The next day the fox makes a different plan, and once again the hedgehog just rolls into a ball. And so the analogy here is that the hedgehog has become a master at this one thing. And the fox, he's just kind of the jack of all trades, and he's not really good at anything, and so he's very ineffective in life. And the Jim Collins talks about the hedgehog as being the intersection of three things. And this is important. If you can draw in front of you or visualize three intersecting circles, the first circle is what Jim Collins calls your passion. You know, this is really where your motivation comes from. The second circle is what you truly believe you can become the best at in the world. And this refers to your skills, the skill levels that you built that are based on your passion. And the third circle, which is just as important, is your profit per X, as he called it, or really what are you going to be making money from? So where these three circles intersect, where your passion, your skill levels, and how you're going to make money from this, where those things intersect, that's your hedgehog concept. Okay, so but the first thing really is to find out what your passion is. So let's look at some more practical tips and techniques that you can follow to help you find out what you're passionate about if you haven't done this already in your life. Now, I'm guessing that it's quite likely a lot of you, it doesn't matter how old you are, just because of the system that you've already gone through and the conditioning that you've been through. And you may be stuck at, you know, at this stage of your life and you're trying to find out, you know, how can I optimize my chances for success online with going on the blogging route. Okay, so let's get into two main techniques that I've really thought about a lot, and it's I've used myself. I've written a book about it, and a lot of other people have tested it, and it worked for them as well. So it's really, really good stuff. Okay, the first one I've labeled the intuitive subconscious technique. Now that sounds pretty fancy, but all it really is making two important lists. Okay, now I'm calling it intuitive subconscious because this exercise is so simple, but it's really driven from your subconscious level, your intuitive subconscious. And when you do this exercise, you don't even realize what's going on. So kind of what happens is what happens behind the scenes when you do this exercise. So the two lists that you need to create to help you do this is the first list is to create a list of everything you absolutely love doing, okay? This is the kind of actions that you love doing, kind of processes that you love experiencing. So I'd recommend you just make a list, a massive list, just do a brainstorm, take a piece of paper and write down as many things as you can. You know, don't stop until you really think there's nothing more else. So just make that list, make it as big as you can, write down everything you love doing. Second list is where you write down everything that you love giving, to people and, you know, to the world. And same thing here, grab a piece of paper, a different piece of paper, and just go nuts. You know, write a massive list of everything you love giving to the world or to people. Now, as you do this exercise, there's already a lot of stuff that's going to be happening behind the scenes subconsciously that you won't even be aware of, but it's going to bring a lot of your passions and feelings to the forefront. And now this is the clincher. The two lists, that's only the beginning. The third step with this is to combine the items that you have on those two lists to help you come up with different potential things that you could be interested in, or as you would call it, your passion or your hedgehog. So this is very simple. I'll give you an example. Say, for example, on your first list for the stuff you love doing, you wrote something like, I love playing the piano. And say on your second list, you wrote something like, I love teaching others. I love giving the gift of teaching. Now, when you combine these two things, you could say, for example, I love teaching. And while I teach, I love playing the piano. So a natural combination of these two things would be to be a piano teacher. And so that way, if you become a piano teacher in this particular instance, you'd be doing something that you love doing, and you'll also be giving something that you love giving. So that's just a great combination. So when you do this exercise, think about how this relates to your blog. So this is the topic for your blog. And so there are kind of two things that's happening here. There's the thing that you're passionate about, and you're going to be blogging about that thing. All right. So, and this method here is to help you figure out what that thing is that you're passionate about. So that's the intuitive subconscious technique. It's very simple, very easy to do. But I've given it a special name so that you will actually go and do it and take it seriously. And don't just look at it and think, wow, it's so simple and, you know, it doesn't have any value. But it does. It has tremendous value when you go through this exercise. Now, the second technique I want to talk about is a little bit more, I guess, in depth. I can't remember whether it was Confucius who said, know thyself, or whether it was Shakespeare. I don't know who said that. But it's this goes into that a little bit more and digging deeper into who you really are as a person and how that relates to what you're truly passionate about. And I'm calling this technique the meta temperament technique. Meta referring to, you know, what kind of happens behind the scenes, and temperament referring to, you know, who you are as a person, your personality. So just a bit of background with this. If you haven't come across personality profiling before, you know, this kind of stuff goes back a long time. Originally, well, in the Western world at least, Carl Jung brought this to the West. He was a psychiatrist from Germany, a very, very talented man, and he came up with a basic set of personality profiles. Now, he actually based all his work, a lot of his work at least, on the Yi Jing from China, the Chinese Book of Changes. Now, this book is about 5,000 years old, so this stuff comes from way back, and it's based on the different elements of the world, which is wood, fire, earth, metal, and water. And when you look, and that's what Carl Jung used. He looked at these different personality profiles and added a bit of his own ideas and made it relevant for us as a Western society. So it's very much personality based. And he came up with you know, all these different personality profiles. I'm only going to give you two key pairs that are I think are the most important ones for trying to find out what you're passionate about. If you've ever done the Myers-Briggs personality profiling system, which is based on what Carl Jung did originally, you'll find out that it comes up with 16 different personality profiles, and it's kind of confusing. And I've never really been able to find out how that actually relates to me and what I'm passionate about. So I'm going to just give you like a shortcut so that you can very quickly find out, you know, what it is that you're naturally supposed to be good at. All right, so there are two key pairs. The first pair is whether you are an introvert or an extrovert. Okay, now this is defined slightly different to what we have nowadays. Carl Jung defined these terms as where your energy comes from. You know, do you get your energy from external things, or do you get your energy from the inside of yourself? So, for example, an extrovert is not necessarily someone who talks a lot, but an extrovert is someone who gets their energy from people outside of them. So, and an introvert would be someone who more gets their energy from being alone and quiet. So an example of this is at a party where you'll have an introvert and an extrovert, you know, towards the end of the evening, say 10 or 11 o'clock, the introvert would go, "Hey, I'm sick of this. Let's go home. I'm really exhausted. The people here have just drained my energy." The extrovert, on the other hand, would go, "No, man, what do you mean? The party is just getting started." So that's how you can really easily tell the difference between the two. Now, the second pair is sensing and intuitive. And all this really means is either you're an ideas person or you like more reality and facts. And that's all it really is. Okay. Now, if you combine these two things, these two pairs, and so, and kind of like a matrix, you can come up with four different quadrants that you'll fit into. Now, these are the things that you'll naturally fit into. It doesn't mean that you can't fit into any of the other ones, but it's just your natural tendency. So it's not about boxing yourself into a certain area, but it's more about just knowing yourself and knowing what your natural tendencies are and just going along with that. To help you be successful at whatever you're doing. So these four quadrants, let me go through them. First of all, quadrant number one is you're either going to be an ideas person related to things. So you're going to be getting ideas about things all the time. These are your typical inventors, researchers, people who like setting up systems and processes. So that's when you get a lot of ideas about things. All right, simple as that. Second quadrant is you're going to be an ideas person with people. Someone like Oprah Winfrey, for example, she's made a career out of that, interviewing people. And so she's very intuitive, but she's also really good with people. Okay, so that's the second quadrant, ideas and people. The third quadrant is reality and things. So you're going to be facts related to things. For example, Warren Buffett, he's a typical example of that, where he loves things like companies and real stuff and stocks, and it's based in reality. And that's why he's such a good long-term investor. So this is more the long-term sort of stuff. And And the final and fourth quadrant is things to do with reality and people. Donald Trump is a really good example of that. This is your negotiators, people who love negotiating, people who love things that are based in reality, but that also involve people. Okay, so those are your four different quadrants. It may take you a little bit to just get your head around all of this, but if you can associate yourself with any of those four quadrants, once you know what that is, it'll help you a lot more in thinking about what is it that you're truly passionate about. Each of these quadrants, if you fit into each of these quadrants, you have a specific gift that you can give to people. And once you know what this is, you'll be much closer to figuring out what exactly that is. Let me give you some examples. An ideas and things person. This is in the first quadrant. This would be someone like an engineer type of person, or someone who loves putting together systems, the inventor. All right, so that's a typical sort of a role for that one, for quadrant one. Quadrant number two are more sort of people like Oprah Winfrey, who have like being sort of the center of attention, being the star, that sort of thing, where there's, you do lots of stuff with people. Quadrant number three is, like I said, with Warren Buffett, where you're more interested in real stuff, accumulating things and making stuff grow. And quadrant number four is more like Donald Trump, where you're more interested in dealing with people, but in terms of the negotiation. So the quadrant number three and four, the people that are based in reality, they're normally good with timing issues. So things with trading, or negotiation, there's a lot of timing that goes into that. And the ideas people are more in line with innovation, coming up with new things. Okay, so if you can figure out in which of those four quadrants you can fit into, that'll help you a lot. Okay, so I don't want to go into too much detail. We're running out of time a little bit, but there's a lot more that you can do in this area. There's a lot of books you can read about this to just help you figure out, what is your personality profile and how that relates to your gift that you can give to the world, and subsequently your blog topic. So let's just quickly summarize this. So I put everything into perspective for you. First of all, you need to figure out what it is that you're passionate about. Then I talk about why it's so important to get this right, because this is the basis of everything. If you could be motivated for what you're doing, nothing's going to stop you. It's just going to help you keep going for that much longer. And then I gave you some ideas about how to find your passion. I talked about the hedgehog concept and the importance of that and the gift that you can give to the world. And I went into the intuitive subconscious technique, finding out, an easy way of finding out what you're naturally good at, making those two lists. And then the meta temperament technique, which is a little bit more in depth and figuring out more what's going on the inside of you. So once you have this figured out, this could take quite a while. Be patient with yourself and just take it step by step. It could take a few weeks, it could take a few days, it could take maybe a few months, in some cases maybe even years. And as I said at the beginning, this is an ongoing process that you need to continuously revisit and see how you've grown and where you need to go next. But once you've kind of figured out what this area is that you're passionate about, that's when you go into the next milestone, which is discovering the need and making sure that there are people out there in the world who would be interested in what you're also interested in. And that's where you can then use what Yara talked about in the first part of this this teleconference. That's really all I wanted to say about this. Yara, I'm not sure if you wanted to add anything to that, or we can just get straight into the questions and answers.
Well, let's switch on hand raising so we can get people ready to go for that. And I'll just, while you're doing that, Gideon, I might just say a few more things too. Or do you just want to switch it on, just explain how that works first, and then I'll keep talking.
All right. I think the hand raising is already on. If you do want to raise your hand, all you've got to do is press the star key and then the 9 key on your keypad, and that'll allow us to see that you're raising your hand, and then we'll go through the questions. Yara, you can, while that happens, you can go into whatever you wanted to say.
Yeah, no, just very briefly, I think we've covered the two elements there. There's the practical research on what the market status currently is, and then, of course, there's the internal referencing of where you currently sit and what you're passionate and interested about. We're trying to get that like a Venn diagram where those two things overlap, where the passion lines up with something that there's a significant market for, where you can be profitable. Sometimes, though, you may have to err on the side of the market and less on your passion, simply because if you want this to be a profitable venture, you may just not have an interest that's specifically popular enough. You know, if you do like some sort of rare turtle and that's all you're passionate about, chances are there's not enough rare turtle fans to make a profitable blog about this. So you may need to expand that to the entire population of turtles. Don't know why I'm talking about that example, but that's you know, that's the sort of situation you may find yourself in. So what you want to be careful of is not doing the reverse. A lot of people will find it, will have a passion, very clear about it, and just flog themselves to death trying to make it profitable. And they'll just hit their head against a brick wall for years trying to make something work. And they just haven't got a market for it. There isn't a market for it. So testing is important, but you want to have a period of time where you decide that I've done enough testing and I've put in a good effort, and now it's time to let this topic go and do another one. So with that out of the way, we're welcoming any questions on topic selection. If you have one and you're not sure about it, or if you don't have one, or anything to do with your blog, and we'll dive into the questions. So go ahead, Gideon.
All right, so we're ready for the first question. Here we go.
Hi, I was wondering about the name of a blog. I don't know if it is outside the scope of this this conversation or not, but assuming that you found a topic, how important is a name that relates to the topic so that it also gives you the ability to be found in keyword searches, et cetera?
Can answer that one. The domain name, it's usually not as important as you think it is. One of the things with domain names, and this is one of the first lessons I learned when I was studying SEO, search engine optimization, the domain name is relevant because when people link to your blog, they very often use your domain name, and therefore the keywords in your domain name are often used as anchor text to point to your blog and therefore improve your ranking for those keywords. So that's where I believe it's relevant. The other area where the domain name is relevant is the human condition, the rememberability, the branding aspect of it. So I'd actually go more important. I'd put more weight on the human part of it and less on the keyword part of it, because you know the keywords, the content in your blog will play a much bigger role than the actual domain name will. So What advice I give to people choosing a domain is to actually, you know, try and come up with a primary or a secondary keyword and get it into the domain if you can, but focus more on the branding aspects, you know, good cadence, make it roll off the tongue well. Entrepreneur's journey sounds good. It's not a great domain. It's got the word entrepreneur, which is too hard to spell, and it's got a hyphen in it, but it actually sounds good and describes what it is. So it's good and bad, but you know, I definitely wouldn't choose that again if I had my time over. But yeah, that would, you know, it's funny because certain domains like Google make no sense whatsoever, but it's become a brand, so that's fine. Most of us are not going to get into that situation. Our blogs are not going to become that big. So think about some of the popular blogs already in the marketplace and what they're using, you know, Pro Blogger, Copy Blogger. Then you've got people like John Chow, Shoe Money. You know, these domains often have either very specific keywords like copy blogger, because it's about copywriting, or the person, John Chow, is the brand, or, I mean, Shoe Money, which is almost like a combination of a fake word and a person at the same time. So no hard and fast rules is my long-winded answer to your question.
Thanks.
All right. Okay, moving on to the next question.
Hello. I have a question about in trying to decide on a blog. I'm wondering if I should go roundabout in my topic or a more direct approach. And I'm a little concerned about being, I'm afraid I'm going to get too narrow. And even though you're saying we should narrow it down and take something very popular and take an aspect of it. And so a roundabout way, I'm thinking, do I come about it from the back door? There is a particular product I'm hoping to sell. And I don't know if I want to stick it out there, you know, right in everyone's face so that everyone sees it because other people are doing that, or should I, you know, come in the back door?
I'll start this off, Yara, and then you can probably say a few more things about this. I think one way to go about this is certainly to just start off if you already have an idea about your topic or niche, and start off with whatever you've got with your more general approach, and see what kind of results you're getting, and see whether you're getting traffic, see whether you're getting people who are writing comments about your blog posts. Depending on your niche, I think it's in most cases better if you can specialize within your niche. Especially if it's quite a big niche, you know, you want to be seen as a specialist in a certain area, and you want to be known as the sort of the go-to person for that specific topic. So, I guess the bottom line is to maybe just put it all out there, put the information out there, and see what sort of feedback you're getting, and take it from there. Listen to your audience, listen to the people that are making comments on your blog. If you're building an email list, you know, ask people what do they want to learn about, and respond to that in real time.
Great. Okay. Sounds good.
Cool. Yara, did you want to add anything to that as well?
No, you covered it, Gideon. I was going to say the market is your answer to that question. They will tell you whether you're too broad or too narrow. Mm-hmm. You'll know because of how the market interacts with you, if they do at all. If they don't, then you may have gone too narrow. Or too broad, in fact, because you may not be specific enough. So, you know, often a sign if you've gone too broad is no one sticks around after finding your blog. They read it once and never come back. If you've gone too narrow, you just don't have anyone coming to the blog. So you got to find the happy medium for between those two areas.
Okay, and it seems like you would start all over. Do you have to change your name? And, I mean, does it make you look foolish to
No. I make this very organic. Don't be too rigid with anything, and let things develop over time. You know, if you can, like we mentioned in that previous question, when choosing a name for the blog, don't be afraid to change it if you have gone very specific. But you know, try and also, you know, you've got the wonderful thing is the the tagline, which is underneath the name of the blog. And you can change that as much as you want. You know, I've gone everything from the internet business blog to internet marketing to now it's, you know, down-to-earth advice for bloggers and internet marketers. So you can keep changing that as you evolve your topic. And trust me, you're going to evolve the topic over time because you're just going to learn about your audience. You can't help it. So, but hopefully what you learn won't be a massive shift from what you're doing. It'll just mean writing blog posts about a few different subjects you didn't consider yourself covering when you first started.
Okay, I see. It sounds good. Thank you.
No problem.
All right. Thanks for the question. Moving right along.
Hello there.
Hello.
Hi, can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay, good. Well, first of all, thanks you guys. You do a really good job. I really am appreciating your work and the call and how much you offer and how articulate you are. You make it very user-friendly. So thank you.
You're welcome.
My question for you, and, you know, sort of running on your idea of working three topics at once and kind of seeing which thing plays out the best. And, you know, also combining that with the information overload, you know, with the learning and the research process, what would you say, if you could, would be the sort of simple cut to the chase, maybe sort of top 3 to 5 things to do to research a topic and feel like there's, you know, there's enough of an audience and you have enough of an interest and that sort of thing? I mean, is there a way you could break it down to make it simple? I mean, I know you can go forever, you know, delving into the details, but is there a way to, you know, like a kind of a quick and dirty way to do it that's fair?
I would recommend a couple of things. First, check on other blogs already covering similar, either broader category or sister category, or even just similar industry type topics to just make sure that they're succeeding. That's not a black and white. If there are no other blogs, it doesn't mean you can't succeed, but it's a good indication. Same with forums. I would look for any forums. You may have to go to a category level above or two levels above what you're thinking about writing to find the forum. But as long as there is a forum that has an audience that's talking about the subjects in your industry, that's a good sign. I would also look for any retailers or any sort of companies or businesses currently selling products or services to that marketplace on a consistent basis. You can do that by just checking Google AdWords. You know, type in a search for Google, see what advertisements come up on the right side of the results and what people are selling and how many people are advertising. Just give you an idea whether there is a profitable market as well as a popular market. So, you know, those are the basic things you can do. It really, though, until you put content out there, you never really, really, really know. But keyword research and that sort of community-based research, seeing what already exists in the marketplace, is the best way to do it.
Okay. Do you think
Go ahead.
So I was going to say, two of the things that I'm interested in are things that I've been involved with for a while. So, I mean, I know there's a marketplace out there. I'm not quite confident about my ability to reach one of them, but I am about the other. I mean, do you think that's fair enough to, to do some of this, but go with your gut and put it out there and just see?
Is there a reason why you don't want to just focus on the one you're confident in, or do you feel like you want to hedge your bets and do two?
I kind of want to hedge my bets, and the one that I'm confident in and I know a lot about, I'm not sure I haven't spent all my passion. I have some, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure because I've.
Well, you'll find out writing a blog, that's for sure. Okay, well, in that case, yeah, probably doing both at the same time is a good idea. You know, the good thing about blogging is you learn so much about yourself at the same time. You know, how much you like the topic, how much you know about the topic, and how much fuel you have left in the tank if it is something you've been doing already for a long time. So, and don't be afraid to reuse any of your old content, too, if this is something you've done for a long time. That's, you know, a great way to get started quickly. But, if you've got the ideas, that's often the hardest part, is finding the areas where you actually feel some sense of confidence in. So I would run with that at least for a month or three first. And I guarantee one thing you will get out of that is some strong understanding of how much work is required, how you build a blog, and information about your market. Because as you go through our program, you're going to be told to do things like go find another forum or another blog on the same topic or a similar topic and submit a guest post or start creating a forum profile there, and that will teach you a lot about your market as well, just because you're forcing yourself to take some actions.
Okay.
Also, I'm not sure if this is a specific issue for you, but some of our other listeners, this may be an issue. If overwhelm is an issue for you and you're thinking, wow, two or three blogs is just too much to handle all at the same time, I'd really recommend you just do one blog. You know, if you've got a lot of other things going on in your life, just start off with one blog. Maybe have an idea of three, but just start off with the one and see how that goes. As Yara was saying, you'll very quickly find out whether that's something you want to continue or not. And if it's not your cup of tea, or you don't get the sort of results you're getting, then move on to the next one and just keep going through that process until you're happy with your topic. And within time you'll find out what that thing is that you want to be blogging about.
Okay, so it's like a lot of other things. It's important to just get started.
Absolutely, yeah. Action is the key word here.
Okay, and I have one more just really quick question. In signing up for your premium course, how do you guys send out the materials? I did the one payment in order to sort of get access to everything when I wanted it, but I don't see it there. And I know it's a little bit of a logistics question.
It's a very simple answer. If you've received the first welcome email from us, that's probably the only email you'll receive for a while, because that email will actually, it has a link inside of that email, a special link that gives you direct access to all the course material all at once. Now, some people miss out on it, on that link. It's the second link in the email. So just have a look at that email. There's a special link in there that you can click on that'll take you to the it's a page that gives you access to all the videos all at once. So that then means you won't be getting the weekly emails delivering that content, because you already have access to all of it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
But just right. if you do want to be prompted on the weekly emails as well, just send a support email. I'm sure we don't mind putting you onto the weekly one, even though you've already paid for everything, if you just want that reminder.
Yeah, I wouldn't, yeah, sure, I wouldn't mind it. And, you know, I had a bit of a computer problem, and I actually can't find that first email. I think I may have it on my phone, but I'm not sure I have it. Is there a way to get that again?
Yeah, absolutely. If you can just you can just send us an email at support@becomeablogger.com, and then we'll just ask for both those things: the welcome email for the full access one, plus signing up just for the weekly emails. We'll set you up for that.
Okay, super. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. Okay, moving on.
Hi. Thanks so much for holding this call and for both of you being available. I'm actually probably not in the same position as a lot of people on this call, in that I'm trying to use a blog to help support a publishing venture. And one of the things that I'm really struggling with is keywords and a focus relative to that. So gathering the audience and then the frequency for posting. My particular focus at this time is on equines or horses, and I'm just really having a hard time figuring out how to narrow it down and find blogs that deal with issues that are not chatting but business oriented.
Okay, I could give a couple of recommendations on that. Yara will also no doubt give a few. If you're looking for other blogs that are related to those keywords that you're looking for, technoratty.com is probably the first place you need to go to. It's like the Google, but just for blog. It's like the Google of blogs. So you can search for other blogs on the technoratty.com search engine. It's a great way of finding other blogs that are related to your topic, and you know, just easily finding them. There's a couple more search engines I'd recommend. One of them is kind of human-based, which gives you some pretty good results as well. This one is called mahalo.com. It's spelled mahalo.com. And if you go there, it's like a search engine, but it's the results are kind of decided upon by voted upon by human beings, right? So the results are very relevant. And then the third one I'd recommend you just check out to help you out with this is a search engine called clusty.com. That's clusty.com. So it's clus for Sally, ty.com. And you go there, it's an amazing search engine that allows you to search for clusters of topics related to your keywords. So have a look at those three search engines. That may help you figure out who else is in your niche, so that you can either get in touch with them or research what they're already doing, and figure out how you can create your own blog that sets you aside and makes you different from everyone else.
Gideon, what I found is when I went on Technorati, there were like 6,000 listings, but whether you do equine or horse or whatever you do, they just show up blogs that mention those words, and they are not blogs that focus on that topic. Is there a way to get specific to the topic of the blog and not just a general word search?
I think one thing you can do is to try and think about widening your topic and your keywords that you're using for the search. So instead of just typing horses, for example, think about, you know, what is the next level up from that to make the search wider. And I'm not sure if you've done that already, but perhaps that could give you some better results as well. Have you tried that?
What do you mean, like horseback riding or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm, you know, I don't know too much about the horsing industry, but if I look at internet marketing, for example, if I go and do a search for internet marketing on Technorati, it'll come up with heaps of results, right? And so that's quite a wide search, but I can also narrow it down to something that's more specific, like list building. which is sort of underneath the internet marketing umbrella, so to speak. So, and you can go kind of backwards and forwards within that general niche to see what you come up with. So I'm not quite sure how you do that with the horsing industry, but think about, you know, what is the wider topic above what you're searching, and what is the topic more narrowed down below for what you're searching. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, thank you.
And I have a question for you that might help me answer your question. What is it, what is the aspect of horses that you are actually covering?
Well, it is riding and handling primarily. So from birth through focusing on training.
So who's the person, like the target consumer or customer or reader you would actually want to attract to this site?
People who ride horses, and it's actually a very, very passionate audience. But what I am finding is it is a growing audience of older riders, and that those are the ones that are really searching for information.
So when they go online, what is it they're trying to find information about?
Usually challenges that they're having, either with the horse that they're working with, or in some cases physical challenges that they're having personally.
Okay, so it's sort of your private horse owner and just generally how to, you know, deal with a horse. Would that be safe to say? Okay, so it's a horse enthusiast. That's pretty much the angle. I'm surprised that you haven't been able to find a forum, at least, on that topic area.
I'm sure. I belong to 20 forums or so. I'm just having problems finding the blogs.
All right. That's probably a sign that there just isn't anyone out there doing a good job at the information. I'm not sure. I mean, if TechnoRide is pulling up thousands of results, then you've got a couple of options. You could actually go and by hand try and find that the caliber, you know, the quality blogs within that, but that's could be quite a painful process, slow, painful process. Often what I find is when you find one good blog, just use it to find other blogs. So it might have a blog role, or it may have linked to other blogs. Even in fact, searching the forum communities you're in and asking the people there, do they know any good blogs that they currently read about these subjects, to find any. But you know, ultimately here, you don't have to worry too much if there isn't a good blog. If there already are good forums, because that shows that there's enough of community. And in fact, you could probably just leverage the traffic already within those forums to bring it back to your blog. We've had a couple of students go through our program. I know one, Paul Petrowski, who specializes in personal development as it pertains to money making issues. So sort of breaking down your mindset problems with making money. And he has pretty much developed his audience purely from the Steve Pavlina forum, which is attached to a blog in this case. But he's just gone and created a high profile in that forum by being a very active member. And of course, whenever relevant, linking back to his blog, having a signature with a link back to his blog. And he's built up a good 2,000 or 3,000 subscribers, I think, to his blog just using that forum. So, you know, if you already have a couple of forums you frequent and they've got your target audience, try and get as many of that target audience back to your blog and also use it as research. Whatever topics are popular in the forum are subjects you should cover on the blog as well.
That's great input. Thank you so much.
No problem.
Good stuff. Right, we've got quite a few more questions coming through. I'm just going to work my way through them. I've just seen a comment on the chat room that someone's having trouble getting into the raising their hand. So what I'll do is I'll just go through these current questions we have, and then I'll reset our admin area here and allow you to press star and 9 on your keypad again if you do want to ask a question. So let's just go through the remaining questions here. Hello, caller, you're live. Maybe not. Let's try this.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, you're live.
We had someone there.
Someone said hello a second ago and we've lost her. It was female. That's all we know.
Looks like our lines just dropped, so I'm not quite sure what happened there. Let's try. If you want to do ask a question again, just try star and 9 on your keypad, and your hand should be raised. We should be able to see that. Okay, let's move on.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I seem to miss the class about forums. What is a forum? Can you give me an example or how I'm just not familiar with that.
I'll leave Yara to answer this one. He's the forum expert.
No, thanks, Katie. Okay, well, the first example I can give you is the one you get access to in this program. If you go to the private members forum, I don't know if you had a chance to do that. That's a forum. That's a good example of the software, the technology that allows a forum to run. So it's kind of like not really a blog. It's more like the comments section of a blog where anyone can start a topic and people can then leave replies. So if you type into Google any phrase, like we just talked about horses before. So if you typed in horses forum, you'd get quite a few results because that's a popular subject. And all it is people in there talking about horses and replying to each other and, you know, having discussions online. It's not real time. It's not like a chat room. It's just here's a post and here's someone's reply. Here's the next person's reply. Here's the next person's reply. And the forum, like forums have been around for years, longer than blogs. They're, you know, very sturdy, reliable, community-based tool that people use. And there are millions of them on all kinds of subjects. So if you're just curious, go have a play with ours to begin with and, you know, introduce yourself there. And you have to register an account as well. And then once you've, you know, learned the basics, and if you're a bit confused with this, Gideon has produced some videos on how to use our forum. So if you go to the help section in the members area, you'll see those videos. So how to set up an account, how to post a new thread, how to reply, those sort of basic functions in the forum. And once you get comfortable, go just do a Google search and see if you can find any forums related to your subject area.
Okay, great. Thanks.
No problem.
Just about the area where those videos, the help videos are for the forum, it's under the forum link inside the members area. So if you click on that, it'll open up a quick start guide for you that shows you everything about forums and how to use the members only forum. So it's under forums.
Thanks.
Or forum. Okay. All right. Moving on.
Hello, this is Donna.
Hey, Donna.
Hey, Donna.
Hey. I have the following concern. I want my business to be on the internet as well as my blog. And I think you recommended before, and I wasn't sure how it worked, that you could actually have a page on your blog that would be sort of like your website, only not the website, it'd just be another page. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Sort of. I think you mean having a static page that's kind of like a brochure?
Well, I don't know about static, but I want to be able to... The thing I'm going to blog about is not that different in a way from my coaching. They don't clash with each other from my business. What's the best way to have both of them as an online presence? I know you don't really recommend static websites very much.
No, well, I mean... Blogs aren't static, and you know, static's okay if you're selling services or products and they just, you know, need to sit, list information. What's important here, though, you've got a business that is coaching, right?
Yeah.
And you've also about to start or have already started a blog. Is that designed to sell?
I don't have a website yet for coaching either, so yes.
Okay, so you've got a coaching service so far. Is the blog you're planning on creating designed to help market that coaching service?
Not really. It'll be linked to it, but it's not really designed for that, no.
Okay. So the,
I want the, it to be linked. Yeah.
The actual purpose behind these sites are not the same thing, then, are they?
No.
Okay. Well, in that case, I would recommend having a blog with its own domain name and just running the blog there, and then having a website with your coaching services advertised if they're that different. See, if they were the same, if they were related in the sense that your blog content could be used to market your coaching, then you just use a blog and you have a page on that blog called coaching where you could have the static information about your services, you know, your prices, how to contact you, etc. If they're not related, though, you want to get that contact information and details about your services on a separate website, so a separate domain name. Now, you could use a blog, because remember, a blog is just a way of controlling content on a website. It's just some software that makes it easy to create a website. So there's not actually any difference between a website and a blog. A blog is just a type of website. So you could use, like we recommend, WordPress. Just follow our videos and install WordPress to run both of these sites. Just one you're not going to update as much as the other one.
Mm-hmm.
You with me?
And you'd use separate domain names.
Yes, I would recommend if they're not related that significantly, then use separate domain names.
How closely related do they have to be when you say not significantly related?
Well, it's about the marketing psychology. If you're writing a blog and it's designed to get an audience that are interested in you and what you're an expert in and what you ultimately coach about, then it makes sense for them to be together on the same domain name. You might even use your own name, or you might have the keyword plus coaching or something like that, you know, like horse coaching. I keep using that horsing example. But that's because you've got a marketing plan there that is linked so that you know what you're there for. You're there to help people with this subject area and hopefully have a small percentage of them willing to pay money to you for more extensive help in that subject area through coaching. So if that's what your blog's about, then it makes sense. But if your blog's about tennis and your service is about how to become a professional golfer, then that doesn't make sense for those two to be interlinked.
No. So it's a question of how interlinked they are. It would be a partial overlap. It would be two circles, you know, that would overlap, but they would be somewhat different.
Now, well, you've got to get this right, because if your message is mixed up, you're not going to convert. So you really want to be clear in your head about what you're trying to be to people.
Okay. So to do a blog in your way, your ultimate goal would really be you're going to try to make money for it down the road, or are you using the .org just to be sure you can keep your control of your domain?
Yeah, well, if you have a domain name, you've got at least enough control, because you always own the domain name, and you can, if something happens, you can set it up somewhere else. You own the address. It's like having the house. We recommend you also use WordPress.org, which is, you know, the download of the software and run it yourself, because you just get more control over all aspects of the blog. If you use something else, then you don't have a level of control and you can't do certain things.
Okay, and you can use that same thing for a website of the other kind, a static?
Yes, you certainly can.
Okay, and then you could link the two.
Yeah, you could just have, here's a good example. There's a very well-known blogger in the technology community, a friend of ours named David Risley. Now, his first website is running blog software as well. It's about computers, you know, all of the hardware, monitors, all that sort of aspects of computers. He also has a blog which is kind of more, I guess, closer to my style of blog, where he talks about his life and a bit about his family, a bit about how he makes money, all that sort of area. Now, they're not related. One's about technology, one's about him and him as an entrepreneur. He does link them together, but all he does is, if you go to the About page, you can see there's a link that says, here's my blog, my personal blog about me, or about the owner of this website. But they're very different subjects, and they're not designed to really do anything together.
Okay. Well, I think that's clear enough for now. I might revisit it with you a little bit later as things become clearer.
Sure, no problem.
Thank you.
Thanks, Donna.
Yep.
Thanks, Donna.
Thank you, boys.
Okay, next question.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, yes. I had a couple questions. I came in a little bit late, so I came in with a part where you were talking about the Google. Doing a search on Google, and I want to make sure I understood what they were saying. But what you were saying was about if you see the result. The number is up about 10,000. That would be good.
That's right. That means there's little competition.
Okay. So for the three different topics that I was really looking at, I'm looking at around 65,000, 75,000. Now, those might be, I'm thinking, the majority of static websites. Is that still a bad...
You know what I do here? I wouldn't, like, none of this is conclusive. What you want to be careful of is, this is what you're doing here is assessing supply and demand. So if you found out the supply is 65,000 pages on Google, you have to go to Google's keyword tool and look up that same keyword you used in that search to find the demand, which is the number of people each month that go searching for that phrase. And you look at those two variables, the supply and demand, try and get low supply and high demand, you know, the classic business formula. That doesn't always work well, though. Sometimes you'll get maybe 100,000 websites, so it's quite competitive, but there's also 10,000 monthly searches. So that's why there is that much competition, because they're all trying to get those keyword phrases. That doesn't mean you can't go for it. You like I said, you may actually find, because you're doing a good job as a blogger, you're producing more content than anyone else, you're producing better content than anyone else, Google will reward you in time. It's not going to happen overnight, but if you do it over time. That system, though, is designed to really focus 100% on the supply and demand ratio. And if you do it properly, according to the Adam and Allen system anyway, you have to find low supply and high enough demand. So at least 1,000 monthly searches and no more than 10,000 competing websites, roughly. You don't have to stick to that stringently. But if it was me, I wouldn't necessarily go, well, I'm really passionate about the subject, but because there's 50,000 other websites about it, I'm not going to go for it. That, to me, would be silly. I'd go, well, my passion will let me beat those people because I will produce better value. I just have to be patient in order to rise in the rankings to get there.
Okay.
You got me?
Pardon me?
Go ahead.
No, all right. I understand what you're saying. My next question then, I guess, is of the three topics, two of the three tend to be more toward the free market. You know, in other words, people go online where they can really look for these, you know, getting information for free. So there's really not a lot of, in my opinion, quote unquote, you know, I can click back a lot of products to really find. I mean, I can do AdSense and find a lot of stuff. I can do, you know, find different banners. But my question is, because these two might be geared towards free as opposed to the third one might, you know, be geared towards where I can really make, I know there's, you know, monetary value there. Should I look either way or take that into consideration?
Yeah. Let me answer your question with the issue of whether there's profitability with this. There's two things to consider. If people are rationally passionate or in pain, and you can create the perception of having something unique, even though there is so much free information already, you will still get customers because they will look at you differently from all the free information. They'll go, you know, you can back yourself up with all kinds of credibility building tools, like qualifications you might have, like experiences you've been through, like testimonials you can get from other people you've helped in the past, like endorsements from other credible experts. All these things can help you be perceived better than that free information. But all of that rests on there being a marketplace that actually buys products. There are some markets that people just will never buy. And sometimes a lack of any retailers selling any products, or in this case, no products being inside ClickBank, may be an indication that, well, one of two things. There isn't a market there that people buy products for, or two, no one's actually gone in there with the product that people actually want, using the right message to talk to them, and therefore they haven't had success selling anything. That's it. It's one of those things are the situation. So you can take a gamble and hope that it'll be the latter, and you're going to come up with a great product that people will want, and you'll be able to speak to them with the right language. And hopefully it's not the former, where there just aren't people who spend any money. And it's impossible to know that without testing.
Okay. Okay.
So I recommend, no problem. You know, just get out there and put something out the door, and you'll start getting some answers to these questions.
Okay. Oh, and happy birthday Sunday, Yarrow.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much. Bye.
All right. Moving on to the next question.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi. I have a question. It has to do with, you're talking about finding a niche, but finding a niche, as you said, is just supply and demand, and you're looking for certain numbers. Isn't actually being profitable in a niche got more to do with branding and understanding how to build up who you are on the internet?
Oh, for sure. I mean, that's secondary, though, to there actually being a market to. You know, you can be have the greatest brand, but there's only one person who is in that market. You're not going to do very well. So if, let's say, we assume that, yes, there are customers spending money in this marketplace and you're going to go after them, then that's the point two that I talked about at the beginning. Sorry, point three, where you are looking to become one of the few perceived suppliers of a certain type of product or service. That's where your branding, where your reputation, where your credibility comes in to make you stand out and somehow be superior as an option to everyone else. So, you know, definitely all the classical business rules apply, but there has to be a marketplace to begin with.
Correct. Are we going to get a lot of information on branding? Because branding is, at least as far as I can tell so far, I've been looking into this for a while, it seems to be more important than the fact that there is a market there, at least for getting traffic and conversion.
Well, I wouldn't agree with that, because if there's no market, like I said, branding means nothing.
I'm assuming there's a basic, as you said, 10,000 person market.
Oh, okay. All right. So there is a market no matter what you're talking about. I cover concepts in Become a Blogger like authentic content and authenticity and building your preeminence and those sort of issues. It's not something we focus on extensively, but ultimately when you're studying the aspects of what it takes to produce good content, you are using that content to define your brand online and who you are, especially if you're an expert. So, you know, the actual tangible part of your blog that creates who you are and the value you give and how people perceive you are the words you write, or if you're doing video or audio, the video and audio you produce. So the sections on content creation in the course are very much related to that subject.
Okay, thank you.
No problem.
All right. Next question.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, excellent. I wanted to ask about doing a topic that you think might be popular in the future. I'm going to just use a brief example, like when the Da Vinci Code came out, suddenly all these obscure topics like Gnosticism and all this suddenly became really popular. What do you feel about running a topic you think may be popular in about 6 months or so?
I think it's a great idea. The only issue with that is that it's kind of hard to know whether it's going to take off or not, because you're dealing with something that could or could not be happening in the future. It could either become very popular or it couldn't. Now, if you're an innovative type of person, which is if you think about the product penetration model, the typical marketing product product penetration model, which will, the people right at the front, the people that are always know everything first about any new stuff, then you probably have a good chance to spot trends that are going to be coming up. I've got a really good friend in Finland who's right into social media and online technologies. You know, he spotted something like Twitter ages ago, you know, a long time ago. He's been on Twitter for, well, probably 3 years now, and Twitter's really only gone mainstream about a year ago or so, if it's been that long. You know, if he was ready with a blog that would talk about Twitter, he would have been one of the first people to have a blog about that, teaching people, for example, how to use Twitter and how to make it more effective, etc. But he also has a lot of other ideas and other things just because of the type of person that he is, really cool technologies, that some of them just kind of died along the way and never really took off. So from that point of view, it's a bit of a risk. But I mean, it's it depends on how strong you feel about this thing and whether it's going to take off or not. And I guess if you've got that early head start in front of everyone else, I mean, then it could work out really, really well for you, because you'll be the first blog out there for that. And if you've got content there that's already been going for 6 months, you're going to be ranking in the search engines already when people start searching for it. So you're going to get a lot of traffic when that thing starts going mainstream.
Okay, that's excellent. Thank you very much.
All right.
I've got an example too, before you go there, that I've seen people run with, is actually covering the Olympics. So often people start a blog a year or two before the Olympics actually happens, make a ton of money during the Olympics, and then that's it, game over. So it's certainly a viable strategy.
All right, but yeah, some of them will be time limited. Is that basically the point?
Well, yeah, it's just an example.
Oh, well, that point.
It does work, but yeah, I mean, you know, it's great if you can get like iPod, you know, great trend there that's still going strong now. You could still be writing about the iPod if you wanted to be. But listen, there's very few markets that last forever anyway. So, you know, but if you're trend watching, there's always the issue that, you know, trends fade. So, but hey, you can do really well. So, you know,
okay.
Go for it.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, maybe just one more thing on that. My background is in commercializing technology, and you know, when we talk to investors, they would always tell us the same story. They'd say they'd pick 10 companies, high-tech startup companies that they'd invest in, but they'd know for sure that only one or two of those companies would actually succeed in the long run. But you know, that's the risk that they take for investing in all of those 10 companies. So that could be a strategy that you could use in your situation, where you maybe select more than one potential topic that you think is going to take off, and that way kind of diversifying yourself, and then thinking that a percentage of those is likely to take off in the future, and that way you kind of hedge your bets a bit and ensure a greater chance of success.
Okay, yeah, that's fantastic. Thank you.
I think we're giving you too many answers now. We'll shut up.
Yeah. You never have too much information, right?
All right. Thanks for your question.
You.
Really good one. Thank you. Next caller.
Hi, this is Carrie again. I've been working on playing around here with AdWords while you've been talking, listening in, multitasking here. And I'm putting in different keywords, and then I'm going, as I'm hopefully understanding you, to Google and typing it in and seeing how many, I guess, websites are using those words. I'm hoping I'm doing this properly. And I'm trying to understand what kind of ratio I'm looking for. Most everything I'm typing in, if it's got at least 10,000 under relevance by local search volume, then when I go back to Google and look it up, it's got a million and... I'm thinking, is there anything that doesn't have, I did find something that's like 50,000 searches and about 700,000 websites. That's the ratio I found so far.
first thing you got to make sure you're doing when you go to the Google search part is you put inverted commas around the phrase. That forces it to look for that phrase as it appears exactly there. If you don't put that there, it'll just look for all the words anywhere in the article. And if
you're
it gets
right.
Those,
that's
so
I've been
yeah,
doing.
That makes a big difference. It'll drop the volume down quite a lot. So
it's down to 96,000 to 49 in the search.
Yeah.
And can you give me an idea again of what kind of ratio we're hoping for?
Well, you know, this is the system I've seen. This is all about setting up a very simple blog, putting 10 or 20 articles in it, and then getting in front of that traffic. So you have to have the supply and demand ratio right. In that situation, we're going for about 10,000 or less competing pages and 1,000 or more searches for that phrase. Now, the problem with that is it's very stringent. And the kind of model we teach with blogging is a lot about creating content that taps into the long tail. So just because you haven't got one phrase that matches that criteria, you might actually find that you've got 100 phrases after you've written, you know, 50 articles that tap into very small traffic keywords. But you get 100 phrases that all bring you 10 visitors a day, you've got 1,000 visitors a day. So the good thing about the model we teach with blogging, as long as you've hit on a market where there are at least people searching for it, and you're consistent, you will get traffic from Google. It's a guarantee. I don't know any blogger in our programs who hasn't made at least some, you know, at least 50 to 100 unique visitors a day from Google within a month or two if they've been consistent with their content production and getting a few incoming links here and there to make sure that Google finds them, simply because of, you own more of the internet. But, I'm clarifying this research method because it is a tool you can use if you're very specific with your keywords.
Okay, and so you're saying I might have one particular narrow one, but there are also other narrow ones that might only have 2,000 searches and...
maybe even 50. You know, they may be very... well, you won't be able to do it. This is the thing. You're not going to be able to get this kind of research because the nature of Google is it accounts for, you know, billions of possible search queries on a daily basis, of which your blog will potentially rank for hundreds of thousands of different combinations of keywords. So that system is specifically, if you were going to create a blog that only had maybe 10 or 20 pieces of content that were all designed to go after two or three or four very specific phrases. That's not what we're doing.
Okay.
And in fact, to clarify, I've never done that type of keyword research for any website I've started. I just give that as an example because if you really want to make sure there is an audience for a certain subject, then that's one way to make sure, at least testing what you think are the most popular keyword phrases. But it's very ambiguous because you may not have the right phrases that people search for, and you may write an article that suddenly pops up for something you had no idea was popular, and suddenly you're getting all this traffic. So really, I'd recommend you just use it as a light guide to try and, you know, make sure there's some people searching for what you have and there isn't 10 million competing websites. But as long as you're getting reasonably good demand and not too much supply, then just get out there and blog. That'll give you the answers. Google will start sending you traffic.
Okay, so you're saying, you know, if I have 50,000 lookers and, 100,000 sites, that's okay.
That's 50,000 lookers is a lot. I mean, you can 1,000 lookers on a phrase is often enough, because if you can get in front of, 100 of them a day, you're getting 100 unique visitors a day, and then, it's going to be more than about one phrase. If I look up my search, my statistics, tough word, that one, I hate it. I will find literally there's probably thousands of actually different phrases that my blog will pop up for. You know, right at the bottom, there'll be some 10-word phrase that gets one hit in a day, up to the more popular ones. I think my name is usually the number one search result looked for to bring up my blog, which might bring me 50 visitors a day. And then in between those two are thousands of different phrases that all might bring in one or two or three or four visitors. That's come about because of the content I produced over time. So it's going to take a bit of period of time to get to this point. But if at the end of a year, if you've written 100 or 200 articles, you will have traffic as long as you haven't picked the most obscure topic in the universe.
And in addition to not picking the most obscure topic, is the other goal to not use, I'm looking under acne remedies, natural remedies. The advertiser competition is very high, that's not what I'm interested in, but and it's so many different ones. And so if I wanted to do that, I know that I'm going to have everyone and their brother also doing that. Is that the idea, not to have something oversaturated?
I don't like to say no to any market, especially if you already feel you're somewhat strong in that area, because you will always have the possibility of defining yourself differently from everyone else there, simply because you are different from everyone else there. And especially large markets, like you're talking about acne treatments, is a very significant market. Lots of people go online searching for that. And that's a significant problem that people really suffer with. So if you have either a unique voice, a unique treatment method, you're more consistent with how much content you produce. If you can focus on a specific type of acne, back acne, whatever it is, There's always a little corner of a large market you can make your own. It's just a case of getting out there and being better than other people or different than other people.
Okay, and so if you see something popular, you can say, let's narrow this down.
Yeah, I'd actually definitely...
Oh, people are searching. Let's get a part
yeah.
of it.
I would recommend that over the other way, where you only see very, very few people going for it and you're not sure if there's enough demand. It's much easier to take a slice of a very large pie and maybe even take some other people's traffic away from them than hope there's enough traffic, because if the pie's not big enough, you're just never going to get off the ground. That's where I see people fail more often than not.
I see. Well, thank you. Great.
No problem.
Okay. There's one more question, and then I'll reset the hand raising functionality, and then see if we've got a few more questions. Next caller.
Hello.
Hello.
Okay, great. Hi, Gideon and Jarl. This is Hannah.
Hi, Hannah.
Okay.
Oh, you got through.
I'm a bit tired. It's 3:55 a.m. here in Spain, so I'm a bit tired.
Wow.
My brain's not completely
functioning. Well.
Yeah.
Thanks for staying up.
Yeah, I had to set the alarm to wake up. I have so many questions, so let's see. I'm going to try to narrow this down. First of all, I, instead of not having enough ideas about what to blog about, I have about 10 ideas. And some of them would be straight blogs, and some of them would be... connected with offline businesses. Like I was thinking about, I live in Barcelona, and I was thinking about something similar to a Craigslist for a specific target market in Barcelona. And I know that you can use WordPress for things that aren't just strictly blogs. And I was wondering if either of you had any experience about this and or knew anybody who had been doing this and any advice in that area. Kind of going beyond the regular blogging platform and to connect offline with online and Craigslist.
definitely not. I don't have the Craigslist example. I know a lot of blogs have branched out, adding a forum. Mine's one of them. You know, if you get a large enough audience through blogging, you definitely got the avenue to do that. Classifieds, similar things, you know, people selling, I mean, I guess that's what Craigslist ultimately is. So you could certainly spin off the traffic from a blog into a classified site as well. The thing you've got to realize though is a blog is often very narrow in topic scope, and therefore the classifieds section. I mean, great example. I brought up Alvarez Fala earlier in the call. His niche is cars, in particular focused on the Australian marketplace. They could start a classified site on selling used cars, and that would be their focus. Very much in Australia would be the main area, and they've actually considered doing that. So, you know, that's a case where they build enough large enough audience, and then they start adding additional services. The challenge you'd have is, what do you initially focus the blog on? Because you want to be careful here. Are you really thinking about like wanting to do a Craigslist, or are you thinking about wanting to do a blog? Because you have to build the blog first before you really get the chance to have a Craigslist.
Right. I'm thinking about more the Craigslist, like going straight into a service where people can find each other in a specific market. Like and so I know that some people, I know that there are plugins out there, and there are some themes, some paid themes that are geared towards this, but I don't even know if that is a good idea on WordPress. Like maybe I should just go for a straight website for something like that.
Yeah, there are a lot of scripts that will let you do classifieds. If you go to the PHP resource index, you Google that, PHP resource index, there's a section there just for classified scripts, I believe, and you will find quite a few options. Most of them will be free.
Okay, that's great. It's PHP resource index. Okay, I've looked
up there's also,
WordPress.
Well, there's one for WordPress.
I've only found several.
There is one for WordPress. Gideon, you'll probably have it, but just before you give it, let me just say, by the sounds of things, you want to do a focused classified site and not a blog, in which case there's no reason to use WordPress, because there are better specifically focused on classified scripts, and then you focus on marketing the classified script and not the blog, but that's, you know, a completely different business model.
Okay. good. That's what I was wondering, because I knew that there were some plugins. So the PHP index, that's not for WordPress. That's
no, these are just scripts you install on a server. There's another one called hotscripts.com as well. These are the two sites I used to get a lot of scripts from. I'm just doing a search now, see if I can find Classify, just to make sure I'm not lying to you.
Now, when you say scripts, does that mean program, like plugin?
Pretty much the same thing. It's a software. It's like WordPress. So you'd have to download the software, the little script from the site, and then there'd be instructions on how to, you know, upload it to a server that you'd rent, same way you'd upload WordPress. And then you may have to just configure some variables or something like that. But most of them come with documentation. Yeah, there's quite a few. If you go to PHP Resource Index and then type in classifieds into the search box on the right, you will find some paid ones and also some free ones. It's a fun site, but just what you want to be careful here is the software is not the big deal. It's how you go about convincing people to actually use the site and what's your marketing strategy. That's where that's where you'll succeed or fail. Software is up and running, and you got to get people to use it.
Right, but I'm at the point where I feel that I know that the most important thing isn't the technical side, but I'm stuck on the technical side. Like, I can't even get a theme up and looking the way I want it to. And I know it's probably psychological, but it's like I don't want to move forward. I don't even want to write a single post until I have it looking the way I want it to look.
Yeah.
Probably just an excuse I'm giving myself.
There's a mindset issue there, I think.
Maybe, yeah. So as an aside, I was wondering if we'd ever be able to have some sort of call where we asked about technical issues. Side question.
We've had technical issues asked on our group coaching calls. The problem with it is they're ridiculously hard to diagnose just using words, because, you know, you need the visuals as well. And I'd, you know, if you're actually struggling with this and it's not something you ever want to get good at, we recommend using Joel from blogtechguy.com.
Okay.
He's been a referral for all of our members for a long time for this sort of thing. Like, if you want a theme modified in a certain way, if you're just looking for a custom theme, I should clarify here, all of this costs money. Joel doesn't work for free.
Right. How much would a custom theme cost, do you think?
Well, the good thing is it depends how custom you want it. You could just get Joel to say, I want this free theme here, but I just like it to change this section of it here, or, you know, add a custom graphical header. That might be $50, you know, because the theme is free. You just have to get that changed and it's done. All the way up to, you could go to a site like uniquebloggdesigns.com, and they have unique themes that you can either buy and use yourself, or they can create something custom. You're looking to spend anywhere from $100 to several thousand dollars in that case, depending on how custom you want it. But I'd start with Joel. But just consider what you want first, you know, and then don't let the look of the site stop you from writing, because you should at least have some articles going live on a weekly basis to keep that site growing, get some search engine rankings, and this, you know, keep the momentum going personally. That's more important than anything.
Okay. Okay, yeah, now I have some.
Remember that you can change your theme at any stage in the future, so you can already start adding content. You don't have to have your final theme up and running before you add content. So, I mean, look at Yara's blog, for example. A number of other blogs I've run as well, I've changed the theme a number of times, but I keep on adding content to that theme. So just changing the theme is not going to affect your content. It may affect your search engine optimization settings, but, you know, that's why you try and change and get your theme right sort of towards the beginning of your blogging career. But yeah, as Yara says, you know, the content's really the important thing for the long-term success of your blog.
Okay. Now I have some specific questions about research again. I've been using the Google keyword tool, and I noticed there's a huge difference sometimes between the global results versus the local past month results. Sometimes it'll be like 10,000 global results, which I think is the average of what it has been over the past year, and the last month will only have like a result of 10. Should we be looking at one column over the other, kind of a combination of both?
I'm not sure. You mean like you're searching the Spanish Google and you're getting local results as well as global results? Is that what you mean? Or
When I do the Google keyword search tool.
Oh, the keyword tool. Okay, gotcha.
Exactly. I always go into English and then all countries and territories. And then it has two columns that several columns. But two of the columns are what the global search results are, which I think means what has been over the last year.
Mm-hmm.
The median or the mean of what it's been over the last year, or the average, and then what it actually has been the last month. Or am I misstating that?
I'm just going to check myself just to make sure again that I'm not saying silly things.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure what you'll find is the global results just refer to including all countries. And you're right. It would be an average over that month.
So sometimes there's a huge discrepancy. Like there's 10,000 in the global and 10 in the local, and then sometimes it's the other way around.
Yeah, I'm not.
And I wonder which is
not
more important.
I'm entirely sure, but I'm pretty sure that local column is actually pulling your IP address, which means it's finding out what country you're located in and giving you the – let me just check that. It's specific to your targeted country and language as well as your selection from the match type drop-down menu. So what they're doing is checking your settings in Google, I believe, or maybe it's your IP address because you're not logged in. Just check that. Obviously, you can change what country you're targeting. Here we go. Yeah. My results are targeted English and Australia. So it's doing by that by default, and it's showing me the local search volume for a phrase I just typed in is 91, and the global is 1,000. So that just means only 91 people searched in Australia, but globally 1,000 people roughly searched for it. So you probably, if you look at the top, it'll say results are tailored to English Spain, which probably doesn't make sense.
Right.
But
I don't just do it to Spain. I do it for when I put in the search, my search categories is English, all countries and territories.
Right, but does it say at the top after you get the results? Does it say results are tailored to English Australia with an edit button next to that?
I'm not sure.
Okay,
but
have a look.
Look more at the global.
Yeah, long story short here, if your blog is aimed to target everyone, then global is what you should go for.
Okay. And another one, when you're looking up competition, I mean, what I've been doing is first I look up the keywords using the keyword tool, and then I go and I look on Google, and I look up how many sites I have to compete with. And then I do like a little conversion. I do a little mathematical conversion. The lower the number, the better. But I also notice a difference between searching keywords without quotes and keywords with quotes, like a huge difference. So I don't know if there's some sort of standard to follow.
Well, with quotes is going to give you the exact match. And the idea with that is just to show you how many pages are competing for that specific phrase. So it's a good way to get supply and demand, but only for that phrase. And that's the problem, I think, with this technique, because if you really want to assess the possibility of building an authoritative blog in a niche, you would have to go and look up hundreds of possible phrases using the exact match tool and see what the potential is if you combine all of the results there to get good traffic. So don't spend too much time with this. Do a bit of research to make sure there's some demand there. But really, I think all your energies, in fact, you probably need to start diverting some of your energies now based on what you've said on this question to writing more content or however you like to produce content, writing or recording audio or doing video or outsourcing it, whatever it is. Because, I'm assuming you've chosen a market that has some demand. As long as you've got some demand. And there's people buying products and services in that marketplace, then the sooner you start servicing them by giving them some of your best stuff, the quicker you're going to build your own little tribe and start having an audience.
Okay. And just one more question on keywords. Basically, the point of keywords, it seems like, is to know where to put your advertising dollars, where to advertise, and also is it to use those words in your articles? If you see that there are certain keywords related to your area, would you try to use those keywords on a more regular basis? Or how do we apply the keywords that we find?
Yeah, you pretty much summed it up. The main reason these tools are used for is actually more often than not pay-per-click marketing, which is mean you're just paying money to buy certain phrases. Not what we do. We don't pay for our traffic. So that's why they're so specific, because it helps a lot when you're doing, you know, because you pay based on the phrase. And that's how the more specific you get there, the better it is. The less money you spend, the more traffic you get with pay-per-click. With us as bloggers, though, the best application of the tool is first just to see whether there is enough search volume for something to be potentially a successful blog. And secondarily, like you said, try and get it into the title of the actual article. You know, I find often doing a search for the spelling of a word, like in Australia, they spell organization with an S, and in America, it's with a Z. So often you will actually get more traffic spelling it with a Z just because there's more Americans online than Australians. So, and there's some things like that where words just make, there's better words to describe things. And if you can get them into a title, you'll get more traffic and a better search result. Titles make a huge deal when it comes to effective blogging. And you got to be careful though, because it needs to attract human beings as well. They have to read your content. So primary importance is humans first, keywords second. But you know, if you're, by the sounds of things, you're actually quite interested in keywords, you strange person. So you can definitely use that interest to help you come up with better titles for, and also better categories and tags, and even just the subheadings in the blog posts and the words you use. You know, it definitely helps.
Okay. Good. Well, thank you very much. That's it, I guess, for now.
No problem,
Anna. Thank you to both of you.
Some good questions there.
Okay. Bye bye.
All right, I'm just going to reset our admin area over here for the hand-raising function. We've just gone over 2 hours. We're happy to answer some more questions, but I'll just reset that hand-raising function. So if you have tried to raise your hand and you do get dropped off, just press star and 9 on your keypad again so that we'll be able to see that your hand has been raised. So just give me a few seconds, and I'll just reset that. I'll give you the signal, the go-ahead signal, once I've got it done. So just hang on a second. Okay, hand raising is on again. So if you do want to ask a question, just use the star key and the 9 key on your keypad, and we'll be able to see that on our side. Okay, there's a few questions that's just come through, so let's jump into them.
I have what I hope will be 2 quick questions. Have either of you found a sweet spot relative to frequency or word count on blog posts?
Yes. We do cover that in the content videos in Become a Blogger, so I'll only go over this briefly, but it is covered in depth there. The statistics on article length, 700 words is roughly the best, but somewhere between 400 and 1,000 seems to be the it's the best in terms of getting people's attention, because they have short attention spans and the more likelihood of them reading the whole article. Most of my articles are well over 1,000 words, up to 3,000 words, so I don't adhere to that as a rule. I don't think it's going to make or break, but it's worth knowing. And in terms of frequency, I started writing once a day. I even got 2 articles a day sometimes when I started building my blog, and that will definitely help. The more quality content you produce, the better. But we've got limitations in the amount of work we do. I only write 2 to 3 times a week now, which is very different from what I used to write when I was just started out. My blog posts are often more in depth now, so it's longer posts, less of them is where I'm at now. But If you're just starting, you'll do yourself a world of good writing one 700-word blog post at least 5 days a week. That will do very good things for your content creation.
Thank you. Sorry to ask a question that's been covered.
No, it's all right.
It's a good question. All right. So moving on to the next caller, I suppose.
Hello.
Hi,
this is Anne. Thank you for this. It's just fabulous. I'm really enjoying it. I really like the notion of the hedgehog concept, and my question is kind of a combination of several that you've had, because I also have actually a lot of things that I'm interested in writing about. And I understand from what you've said that it's best to have separate URLs for most of them or each of them. Have you ever seen, or do you think it's a good idea to kind of have a hub or a hub site that's very general and then links to different blogs from the main one, from the main URL?
Yeah, I think that's certainly something you could do. The question is, will that be the best way to go about being a successful blogger? The issue with trying to run a number of different blogs at the same time is simply time. Mm-hmm. It's going to be difficult to manage all of them if you're running it yourself. If you've got a team of writers who will be helping out to create content, then maybe it's a different story. So maybe a possible way to do that is to have the hub blog as something that you manage, perhaps, and you still write relevant, useful content there for the audience coming to that blog. And then you get your team of experts to write on their own separate blogs.
Which I don't have.
It's kind of tricky because it also begs the question, these other blogs, how different would they be in topic? And if you have them all kind of linked together in this one hub blog, who's going to come and visit the hub blog if it's got all these many different topics that you're trying to cover? So it'd be difficult to kind of have a very consistent message on that hub blog.
Could you have, though, links to different URLs from the hub blog so that they could come, say, separately to one particular URL or one particular blog, or, come in kind of on the, if you can sort of think about a cartwheel or something. So
Anna, I give you a suggestion here because this is done in blog networks. Obviously blog networks are loose associations of blogs that somehow are connected. They may, the topics may be completely different, but either one person owns them or everyone's joined the same network. And what you'll find is it's almost like a directory, a page that pretty much just puts the logo plus a link to that blog, maybe a logo and a paragraph describing it. And every single blog is listed on this one page. Or maybe there's like a mini site. So it's got an introduction page that talks about the network. Then there's a page that lists all the different blogs in the network. Then there's a page about how to get your blog added to the network and contact the owners, something like that.
Oh,
so very simple,
okay.
Sort of directory type site. Okay. But what Gideon was talking about is almost like replicating your content in one master blog, which probably is waste your time, really. So
really what I'll do is go through your process, go through the hedgehog process, and go through the temperament, introvert extrovert Myers-Briggs thing, and just try and actually make a decision. This has been my issue for so long because I do so many things. I've lived a relatively long life compared to some, so I've got a ton of interests and a ton of passions. And some, like one person said, she has a lot of information to put in, but that's not necessarily her number one passion, as it were. And so I'm kind of in the same boat. So yeah, I'll try. Maybe a couple, throw them against the wall and see what happens.
I'll let Gideon give you some more advice on that, finding your passion when you've got too many choices. But definitely don't don't have the real world, sorry, I should say the internet, don't let your blogs reflect your indecision. The blog needs to reflect the one good blog you're going to go for once you get to that point. So.
Okay, yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
And, you know, have a listen to the recording and what Gideon talked about the hedgehog and so forth, if you need to. It'll be up shortly after the call. So.
Oh, will it? Okay, yeah. You mean the recording of this? Or?
Yes, yes.
Okay. I did take pretty good notes, but I will listen to the recording again too, so that'll be great. I think I've got 13 and 14 pages of notes so far.
And I know what you feel like because I'm kind of similar in a way. I've got so many different interests, and the question is, you know, how do I pick one and just stick to it? And that's why I've been applying this hedgehog concept, because I really know that it works. And I think you can probably apply it to more than one thing in your lifetime. It doesn't have to just be the one thing for the rest of your life. Some people do that quite well. Maybe you're not one of those people. I don't think I'm one of those people. I like having, you know, doing a few different things. But certainly, if you can find that one focus for at least a period of time, and make that a success, and just focus on making that one thing work, then I think that immediately increases your chances of success. And, you know, once you've made that a success, then you can move on to the next thing, your next area of interest, your next passion, so to speak. So just by picking one doesn't mean you're locked down for the rest of your life.
That's right. And I'm also doing some copywriting courses at the same time. So thank goodness I'm retired and not working. Well, retired is not quite the right word, but not working outside. Great. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you for your questions.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
All right. Moving right along. Oh, sorry. Did you have a question, Yara? I haven't clicked the button yet.
Oh, no, I didn't.
I heard you breathing, so I thought you might have a question.
No. That was me getting hungry for lunch.
Okay, right. Moving on to the next question.
Hi, Jairo and Gideon.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, can you hear me?
We can
hear you.
Hi, Jairo, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
Cool. I believe the last caller name was Anne, and I'm Hector, by the way. I don't know if you can see the name or not, but I'm Hector, and I have LatinoWebCafe.com, which I started about, three months ago or something like that. And I had the same dilemma that Anne was talking about, and I don't want to repeat the conversation because I'm going to add one more spin to it, but I had three main topics, and it's a blog that I wanted to make it a hub site with three main kind of topics on the blog. One was about Latin music. The other one was about sports related to Latinos. And then the third topic was kind of business career. And I still have those in the kind of in the menu, if you may, on the top of the page. And what I found out was that it was very hard to keep those three topics going, especially when you have a very demanding full-time job. And it kind of spreads you thin. And just recently, I decided to just focus on one, which is the one that I have probably the most passion anyway, which is the Latin music thing. So I'm kind of focusing on that one. And kind of what Gideon finished the last question with, and his response was, you know, focus on that something first and then go to the next one. And that's kind of the lines of thought that I had, and I wanted to ask the question, but Anne did it before I did. So that said, what I would like to add is if you want, for example, in my situation, I'm focusing the blog in English because there's a bigger population of Latinos that speak English in the United States than Spanish speaking, believe it or not. However, I'm not only picking viewers or visitors from the US, but also from many countries. So I wonder if I wanted to make it bilingual, How would I, what would be the best way to do that? And that might be a Gideon question. It's kind of more technical, I guess.
Bilingual, so you mean like having two different blogs? Like having the same,
well, it would be the same language on the same blog. If I write an article in English, I would like to translate it to Spanish. But I don't want to have both articles in the same place, I guess. Not in the very same place, but I wonder if there's a way to make another page or something that would be in Spanish and one page in English or something like that.
Right. You know, I'm wondering whether it may be worth setting up a separate blog for the Spanish one. And the reason for that is because then it's, that Spanish blog will rank really well for those Spanish keywords for a Spanish Google search. And the English one will rank well for the English Google search. Whereas if you have them both on the same blog, it may be confusing for people who go there and they might click on a link that takes them to the Spanish page and they'll think, oh, okay, this is a Spanish blog. So I don't know. I haven't actually tested this myself, but I'm just thinking, you know, what makes sense to my mind at this stage would be, in my mind at least, it'd make more sense to have one blog just English, another one at a different domain in Spanish. Same content, but just different in Spanish. And because it's in a different language, you're not going to get penalized by Google for duplicate content because, unless they've got some really clever algorithms, which I'm not aware of.
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Okay. Yeah, I'll try that. I'm trying to make it so that the domain name still be the attraction, you know, like mine is Latino Web Cafe, that would apply to both English and Spanish, and then maybe have Latino Web Cafe, maybe slash Spanish, or something like that.
Yeah, what you could do with that, a lot of people do this with their domains, is just have a subdomain. So it would be Spanish.LatinoCafe.com, and then the other one might be just www or English, depending if you want to define them that way. And that the thing with that is you still have the branding of the domain name, but they actually are looked upon as two different sites in the eyes of Google. So you get the best of both worlds.
Ah, perfect, perfect. Thank you very much. And thanks for keeping these calls on. I like them. I kind of called in late today, but I called in the middle of the answer or the middle of the question that Anne had, which was very informative. So I guess I called at the right time. Thank you very much, guys.
All right. Thanks, Hector.
No problem.
Okay, next question.
Yes, my name is Michelle from Illinois. And I guess my main question is, I've been looking on, like, SpyFu. And is that basically what they're paying for the ads, for the pay-per-clicks?
It tells you what people pay for ads on pay-per-click, yes.
Okay, because what I was looking at, I was kind of going, like, career orientated, you know, over in the U.S. We've got so many people without jobs and trying to go kind of that direction.
Right.
So basically that would help me decide on which ones to maybe go for as AdSense?
It's a couple of ways. It shows you if you were yourself to use AdWords and to buy traffic, what you would actually have to pay for certain phrases.
Okay.
So it gives you that information. It shows you how many people are already paying money to compete for those words, so how much competition there are in pay-per-click. But since we're not really teaching that, we're teaching blogging here, you're right, it can teach you the opposite, whether you're going to potentially make okay money through AdSense, because AdSense, the amount of money you make per click on an AdSense ad is related to the amount of money the advertiser is spending on AdWords. So yes, that will tell you a little bit there. It also just gives you an indication of what the worth of a customer is to a retailer in that marketplace. So, you know, you can find some really interesting stuff about, say, the real estate market or the insurance market, and you'll find these advertisers are spending sometimes $100 per click to get one potential real estate client. And you might think, wow, there's a niche I can go into, because all I have to do is sell two or three people a day and make amazing money in that area. So that's where it's useful.
Okay. Yeah, that's very informative. I guess that's the only question I have. I appreciate you all helping us, really. This has been great.
Well, thank you for your question.
Thanks for your question. All right, we have about four more questions here, four more hands raised, and then we'll probably bring the call to a close. It's been a pretty good call. I mean, it's been 2.5 hours almost. Just wondering my web control area is just
you jinxed it.
Frozen. Let's just see if I can refresh that.
Yeah, I think we're going for a record here. I think our longest call I've done is two hours 35 or 2 hours 25. So I think we're just about to break that record.
Yeah, it's going well. All right, I've got my interface back. All right, so there's about four more people here. So let's go to the next question.
Hi, Jerry and Gideon. It's Hector again. I just forgot to ask one more question. Different topic, though. On the Become the Blogger course, you preach that, and you, because of the content, it makes sense, obviously, to keep the WordPress version that we use. I believe it's 2.6.3. What I'm wondering is, is there a certain point, maybe after you complete most of the course or whatever, where you could actually then upgrade, or it makes sense, or do you subscribe to the school that you should stay in 2.63 for whatever reason?
We do teach 2.63 inside the whole of the course, and there's a number of reasons for that. But we also do show right towards the end, I think it's the last instructional tutorial, how to upgrade to the latest version of WordPress. Now, we make that optional right at the end because there are always a number of issues with upgrading to the latest version. And, you know, things like dealing with new bugs that are in new software and issues with the latest plugins that haven't been updated yet and haven't had time to for the developers of those plugins to update the code for those plugins. So there are a number of issues with upgrading to a latest version of WordPress. But, you know, we do try and state those risks there for upgrading. And if you're happy to go ahead with that and take those kind of risks on board, then, you know, go for it. For one of my blogs, I'm on version 2.7, and that's a pretty good version. It's easy to use, and it's a very clear sort of interface. But, you know, going from version 2.7 to 2.8, there's something like 780 different bugs that they had to fix. And, you know, you just never know how many bugs there are in a new piece of software. But certainly if you do want to upgrade, that option is there. In saying that, though, 2.6.3 is a pretty stable version. If you have a burning desire to upgrade, then that's your option as well.
Okay, I get it. So there's no other, once you go through the course, you said the last piece is to a how to upgrade if you want to, unless you see a big want to take advantage of some of the benefits of the newer version. Other than that, it would be no compelling reason to do the upgrade. Is that correct?
That's right. That's right. I mean, the newer versions are that they have perhaps a it's a different interface that the newer versions have. I'm not sure if it's always better. They do try and improve the software with newer versions, but you know, we've run blogs before in the past where we were still on very early versions of WordPress, and they were functioning very well, you know, without any major hassles. So we do have that there as an optional thing that you can do if you do really do want to upgrade to the latest version.
Hmm. Okay, very well. But you recommend right now, your recommendation would be to stay in 2.63 even after you complete the course.
Look, it's neither here nor there. I think it really comes down to your personal choice, whether you like to stick to the current version, because if you want to go back to the videos, it'll be consistent with your current version. If you're a bit more keen and like the idea of new stuff and a new interface and perhaps a little bit of new functionality, then upgrade and go from there. Any trouble with upgrading is you can never go back. It's not always an issue. But that's just something to keep in mind when you do upgrade.
Perfect. Thank you again.
All right. Thank you very much. Okay, next question.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, this is Gordon. Gordon Wood.
Hi, Gordon.
Yarrow and Gideon. And thank you.
Gordon, your line is just very faint. I'm not sure if there's quite a bit of feedback as well. Just wondering what we can do about this. Do you have any speakers on at the moment that you can maybe turn down a bit or something like that?
I think it's a Skype line. Are you using Skype, Gordon? Because it sounds like you are.
Yeah. Is it no good?
It's a bit better. Try again.
Yeah, I'll just try again. Look, I'll just be very quick with one question, and if you can pick it up and feedback. But I have a business. I also run a job. My job is performance consulting for that time. It has nothing to do with the business. It's about business itself. So, but the reason I want to tell you, Gideon, is yesterday they were talking about marketing and putting up a website and doing some marketing material. And they just asked my opinion about their topic. And it was independent because they were the finance world. And I said, well, you've got a boss. And they said, yeah, well, you don't quite know how to do that. And I said, well, I explained that I was doing it as something of my own business. And it occurred to me that there's no one out there that can advise business on how to write blogs and how to do them. And I just wondered if you got some advice about, first of all, how can I advise them? And not the blogging business,
but
more about marketing. And also, where can they go?
Okay. I was pretty tough trying to hear the question, Gordon. So I'm just going to repeat the question. And I might just mute your line because there's quite a bit of feedback there. So sorry if the call gets dropped. Let me just try this.
Maybe I'll call back
later on. Yeah, there's something not good with your line, but if I got your question right, you wanted to know whether you could set up a blog that teaches other business about blogging. I'm not sure, Yarrow, if you got the same basic question out of that.
Yeah, that and possibly just acting as a consultant too, not just running a blog about that subject, but running a business about that subject.
I think first thing I would probably say to that, Gordon, is that if you do want to teach people about blogging, I think the first thing to probably have in your arsenal, so to speak, is to have a bit of experience first of your own and some successes of blogging yourself. If you can have that before you start teaching other people about blogging, that'll just give your credibility a massive boost. So that's just one thing to keep in mind for entering into an area like that. If you're already an established blogger, then of course it's much easier to teach others how to blog as well because you got that instant credibility. That's my part of the answer. Yara, I'm not sure if you wanted to add a few more things to that.
Yeah, pretty much the same thing Gideon said there. Get some credibility, get some experience, go through our course so you know what it takes to build a good blog, and then find yourself a little niche market, possibly in the real world, servicing businesses. It's actually a great strategy for anyone in internet marketing who gets any kind of experience doing anything with a website. You can take that offline and approach a certain type of small business in the real world and say, I will do this type of internet marketing for you for this price. So that can be a great way to get a business going. And certainly blogging, if you can become proficient at it, you don't have to be any better than, know how to build a blog and get some traffic to it and some basic optimize that. Everything you learn in the course, really. if you know what we know, then you can teach that to other people and just have to pick a little niche market and go for it.
Okay, so Gordon's line's dropped, so we'll have to move on to the next caller. Gordon, I hope we've answered the question there for you. All right. Next caller.
Hi, yeah, it's me again. We chatted earlier. I just wanted to know a little bit about actually trying to make a product or branding around your name. Like, both you, yourself and Gideon have both kind of done this. Like, I imagine, as you said, most of your searches seem to come through Yaru Starak rather than actually the Become a Blogger page. Is this usually a good way to go, or is it only for specific products, is what my question is?
That's really a strategic question on how you want to structure your business. It is definitely an advantage if you use your person as a brand because of the human-to-human connection you can get there, the credibility you can build. You don't have to use your own name, and there's quite a few people out there who just use a pseudonym to market themselves with. David D'Angelo is the name that Evan Pagan uses in the dating marketplace, and that's often a good way to still have the credibility and the human-human connection without necessarily branding yourself as that person. So it does work well. It really depends on what market you're going for, how big the market is, how best to communicate with them. But in the blogging realm, it's very powerful.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, that's all I really wanted to know. Okay, thank you very much.
Okay. No problem.
Thank you. All right, this looks like the final hand raised question, so let's go for it. Caller, you're live.
Gideon?
Hello, yes, we can hear you.
Gideon, this is Azra Bhutar. I just sent you an email because I couldn't figure out something on Skype, so I just sent you an email. Basically, what I want to find out is that in somewhere I read in your book, roadmap book, and also Gideon just mentioned that you should have at least 3 blogs to test out which one might be the right one for or makes more sense. Does it mean we have to have 3 different URLs or 3 different domains and 3 different hosting service?
You do need you will need 3 different domain names, but you can have them all on the same hosting account if you want to. You can also choose to have 3 different hosting accounts, but of course that's a little bit more expensive. I would recommend just starting with one blog. Just go through the process of setting that up on your one host, and see how that goes, and just get comfortable with that. Once you've got that done, then you can figure out how to add another
exactly what I wanted to hear, because I really don't want to expend too much energy on different blogs. I want to have one and really work on that, put all my energy and my resources there. But right. I wasn't sure whether having just one, and if it doesn't work, then you have to start all over again. Basically, mine was really servicing 3 generations of women, you know, mothers, daughters, and grandmothers. And there's a whole host of things to write every single day. I have no qualms about my coming up with topics that are of interest to mothers and daughters and grandmothers and everything that pertains to their life, from right. You know, from health, from cooking, from teaching, all kinds of things that where I want to make it interactive, where they can leave their own particular questions or answer my questions. For instance, I have grandchildren who say the funniest things, you know, and I want to sort of use that as to hear from other mothers and other grandmothers the funniest thing their children ever said, you know, just to make it interesting and where people will come and read and would like to participate in that kind of thing.
Right. I think there's nothing wrong with just starting with one blog and giving that a go, putting your attention in that, especially if you're if it's a topic that you know that you feel pretty confident about. The reason why we say 3 blogs in the roadmap is I guess for those people who are not quite sure, and mm-hmm. that's one reason. Another reason is to kind of spread your bets a little bit and to you know, just in case there's one of those topics that might take off and another one might not. But I mean, if another strategy is just to start with one, get the feeling of blogging and the hang of mm-hmm. blogging out of the way first, and you know, experiment with it and get your content out and start seeing the kind of response you'll get from people. If it doesn't go anywhere after a while, or you lose interest in it, then it's not a problem. Then you just move on to the next blog and start that up. So you can do that on the same hosting account with a different domain name. But I mean, you can tackle that issue once you get there. Once once you're really certain that whatever you're blogging about is a no-go.
And also, staying on the same topic, where you do the research to find out what kind of interest that might be, you know, for you to blog the subject that you're blogging on. What if I model something that I know for sure is working for one particular mother, and she writes about nothing but her own personal, mundane, everyday, some would say boring life, her child, her dog, her, you know, her, what her husband said to her, what they ate, what, and she's highly successful. And I think I sent you her website called Juicy, and she. Okay. She is like 40,000-50,000 a month from just her own personal life. So I'm really basing mine on that kind of a model, except it's not going to be more about me so much as about the audience that I'm trying to address.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the great thing about blogging and this whole social media movement is that it's all about the conversation and relationships that you can build with other people. And so my guess is the reason why your friend's blogs become so popular is because she's probably writing about stuff that a lot of other mothers can relate to.
Exactly.
And that they wanna see what this mother is getting up to and have an interaction with her and compare that to their own lives.
Feeling of being a voyeuristic? You know, you want to look into other people's lives and see how they're doing, and then maybe compare it to your own. So I haven't done much research on everything, but I do know that all the topics that I'm going to be talking about, people have asked me time and time again, how did you teach your children to read before the age of 5, and how did you do this, how did you do that? So I know that there's a lot of interest in the things that you know that relate to women's everyday life. So, and I was hoping that once I got it going, then I can start a membership site where I can teach parents how to teach their own children to be able to read before they start kindergarten, because I know I did it with my own children and my grandchildren.
Okay.
So
it sounds like a great topic, and especially if it's something that you're interested in and you can provide value to your audience. I mean, and your value can be defined in many different ways. I mean, value is really in the eye of the beholder, just like beauty. But that's why you've got to test it and see whether it'll fly. And, you know, it'll take a wee while before you know whether it's going to fly or not. So but give it a go and see what sort of a response you get, you know, see if you get comments on your blog.
Also, I wanted to ask you, sorry to cut you, you're running short on time, is that I've already written at least 6 or 7 posts of. So when you actually get your blog up and going, I should have at least 10 to 12 posts already written. Is that a good idea or not?
Well, you know, you can already, if you've got your blog structure set up already, you can start posting blog posts already then. You don't have to wait until
I haven't got the structure set up. I haven't started that. Yeah, right. I was going to do it the proper way. Go through the whole lesson. And meanwhile, while I'm waiting to do that, I've been writing on different topics.
Right. Well, that's good. If you've got that content ready to go once your blog is ready,
exactly.
Then you can simply add that to as separate posts. You can maybe space them out a day each or whatever. And I mean, you could, if you want to, add them all on the same day as separate posts. But it's you know, you might as well add them one every day, and then buy you a little bit of time to add some more content for when you run out of content. So, it's good if you already have that content ready to go once your blog structure is set up.
So when you say add it all on the same day, I don't know where I read it. I wish I had made a note of it. But they said that you can space it out or write it in such a way that it appears as if your blog isn't new. It's been there. But archive it?
You mean like programming and it's like adding all the blog posts in the back end and the admin area and then programming it so that it gets published in the future sometime? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
you can certainly do that. I haven't done it myself personally, but I know that Yara's done that before. So it's just a function inside the admin area of your blog that you can set. So instead of publishing it right away, you tell it to publish your blog post sometime in the future.
Okay.
Okay.
And mostly the ones that I've written are really on topics like that lady who, I forget her name, Susan Boyle, who had the world up, you know, crying because her voice was so wonderful. I wrote on that, and then on different things. So that's it was topical, but it's old now. So does that matter?
Well, I think one of the key things for when you create content for your blog is to think in terms of, how long will this content be relevant? And so obviously the more relevant you can make it for the longer period, the better. Yeah. And we do cover that also in the content creation module, where we talk about how to create that kind of content so that when someone comes and visits your blog in a year from now, the content you create today is still relevant for them as well. So
that's exactly what I've tried.
It'll just help you increase your traffic, yeah.
So I make it what I've been trying to do, that take a topic topic that is in the news or a lot has been on the YouTube, and but make it so that it's sort of evergreen, that when people do go to it, they find not just there's a lesson there that I try to bring out into that from that subject matter. So in other words, people, when they do read it, it's not just based on that woman, but the experience other people may have and how it pays to, recognize your own personal talents and, that kind of thing. So where I try to make it where it's evergreen and people can get some value from it, even if it's a year old or 2 years old.
Good. Now, I think that's a really good principle, and we do that too with all the content we create. We try and what we call future-proof it, so that it's relevant now and also in a year's time.
Exactly.
So did you have any more questions about topic selection, Ezra?
I really don't, because I wasn't. I read everything you send, and I've more or less kind of done a little bit of research there and here and there. But since mine isn't one particular topic, because that scares me, I don't think I could come up with. On one particular topic, hundreds of articles. So what I've done is to take take a group of a generation of women, and I know that there's unlimited subject matter to talk about, which will keep me going. And I have so many different interests, and I want to bring them all together in that, in that web, not web, but my blog. I also have one thing I did ask you, and I think you sent me an email, and I really didn't understand your answer. Basically, it is that I had a website called Your Words Matter, but that header or that logo I want to use on my blog, but I don't know how to make it fit in the theme. When you talk about a theme of a blog, is that the very top, how the blog looks?
So we're covering this in detail inside the course. So we do have a couple more questions from people, and we're just running out of time. So I think if you wait for the course, that'll cover that information in a lot more detail, and I'll answer all your questions for that.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you very much for your call. Okay, we've just got a couple more questions over here, and then I think we'll close the call because I've actually got to shoot off. Let's see how we go.
Hey, there's a lot of automated ad blocking programs out there that block ads on your blog, and I don't know if that can hinder a business. And one in particular I know about is AdBlock Plus, courtesy of Mozilla Firefox. Is there anything that out there that you know of that can disable these programs when they enter your blog?
Ad blocking, I'm not aware of any. I'm just not sure if this is the right place to cover that question. I think a good place to ask this question is inside the forum, our members only forum, and there should be someone there to be able to answer that question within 24 to 48 hours with a little bit
I'll give you a quick answer to it. I'm pretty sure I don't know any software that will actually stop that from working. It may exist, but I wouldn't stress too much about this. If people want to stop seeing ads, they're going to find a way, and you don't really need to worry about them. You just, you know, the people who, the average user does not understand the ad blocking technology beyond what comes default in browsers and so forth, which don't stop the banners on your blog. So you're all good there.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
No problem.
All right. Thank you, Vico. All right, one last question, and I think then we'll close the call. We'll probably finish up in about 3 hours. It's a mammoth call. I've definitely a record. I've never been on a call this long, but here we go. It's the last question.
Gideon, this is Sanford.
Hi, Sanford.
And just a very quick question. That's the last one. Everybody's getting tired. Basically, wanted to know if for a content creation post on your blog. I've seen a lot of people recap other people's blog posts and write a quick summary and then put the link. And I personally like that because you don't have to go through every link and see what it's about. But I've seen quite a few blogs doing that. There's a stock blog called Kirk Report that does that a lot. And I find I can just go there and see all the stock news for the day.
Right.
So do you think do you like that as an idea, or I've heard you say before that you don't particularly like that because you do have to write your own content as well.
I'll
start it off and Yara will take it from there. I personally prefer having original content that's either been a result from previous experience, previous research that I've done, or a personal observation. In saying that, though, I don't think there's anything wrong with collating information from different blogs and then putting your own spin on it. But I mean, if you just kind of copy and paste stuff, then I wouldn't recommend that, really.
Understand.
Oh, I'll hand it over to Yara. He'll have a few insights on that too.
Yes, same deal. If that's all you do on a blog, it won't become popular. There are a few that can function as, I guess, news portals, but they're very rare, and they're often run by people who are just manically searching the internet 24 hours a day to get the latest news first, because that's the only way to become a leader, is by being the quickest to get the most variety of information from the most sources. And that's not a fun job, trust me on that, especially as an individual. Much better to just produce, you know, some really powerful original content of your own. And in between, you can intersperse some, often they're called link posts, where you just link out some of the best articles you've read during the week. But, you know, I wouldn't go further than that.
Understand. Okay, I'm really enjoying the class. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Sanford.
Thanks, Sanford. Hey, we see that exactly the same time, all right?
Jinx.
All right, well, that brings us to the end of the questions for this call. It's been a mammoth call. Thank you very much for everyone that stayed on this time. We've kept about half the people on the call compared to the beginning, so that's pretty impressive. Thank you very much. I mean, it's been really good going through these questions and this presentation and hearing the kind of questions that you've got related to setting up your own topic. I think the bottom line is to, kind of go for your gut feeling. At the end of the day, there's going to be one topic that you're going to really enjoy and you're going to be attracted to naturally. And my recommendation is just to go for that one first and see how that goes. Test it, and if you get good results, keep going and just focus on it. If it doesn't work out, just move on to the next one. But this brings us to the end of the call. Yaro, did you have any concluding thoughts before we close off?
I'll just thank everyone who has stayed on the line with us for this entire time, and also anyone who downloads and listens to the recording to the end. I think that's pretty impressive in itself. If you're a member of Obviously Become a Blogger, we do have regular calls like this, not on a specific topic. We take all your calls related to blogging and internet marketing and membership sites. So if you didn't get a chance this time, and that includes the people who posted a few questions to the forums, we have had to miss those. We'll get to those in the next call. So just look for emails from us regarding any future coaching calls. We try and do at least 2 a month. So we'll speak to you very soon. And thanks, everyone. That was good fun.
Yes, thanks, everybody. And as is custom, we'll open up the line and gives you an opportunity to say hi or say where you're from, maybe even mention your domain name, and that'll bring us to the end of this call. So thanks, everybody.
Hey, thanks so much, guys.
I enjoyed it.
Thank you very much, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Ciao.
Bye from Seattle.
Happy birthday,
Jarl.
Thank you.